I was only halfway in the first time, I guess.
I've been
That's
there.
That's what she said.
I've been there. Oh, back when they were tight.
Stupid.
Can we say these nasty things? I don't know if we can say it on this show. I'm not used to this.
I guess Mike's always cursing, you know.
Oh, that's right. So. He's a shock jock. He doesn't believe in editing out anything. He just leaves all the nasty in. That's right. I forgot.
That was a new one. I've never had that happen before.
Uh oh. It's a new connected, thing.
But still ring it.
Oh, I've had that many times. It'll ring on my iPad after I've answered, and it'll still be ringing on my iPad.
Phone. I don't have it anywhere but on my desktop, so I don't know what that was weird.
It goes on all devices.
But anyway.
Alright, this is episode 80, right?
I think it's 81.
I looked
81,
on the website.
Maybe?
Oh, is it 81?
Let me look.
It said 80.
It's me.
Whoa! Yes, the last one. Okay, Mabel, we got it right.
You get it right.
Wow.
Yeah. She's that
dog is a stickler.
She's angry about not getting it right. Shit.
Jeepers. Jeepers creepers.
Damn. My bad.
It's funny. She goes on our bed because she knows it's the one place that she can look outside, so she'll look out the side window that she can reach from the bed, and that gives her a view of the street. So she probably saw a dog getting walked by or something.
Oh, she throw things out the window.
Yeah.
She says she yells out, "Son of a bitch!"
Yeah. Get the fuck out of my neighborhood! Get the fuck out of my neighborhood!
You bitches, get off my block!
That's what it amounts to, basically.
Yeah, that's what they do.
This is my street!
It's my street! God damn it.
But, so... We have a all New York edition of Geek Brunch Retrocast.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Crazy. New York State.
Now that we're under a new administration, we're keeping things to the blue states.
New York.
Well, you got to give them credit. Colorado's a blue state, too.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, that is true.
No, he thought my description of the Outer Rim sounded so appealing last time that he wanted to head out there himself, so check things out. It's funny because I was complaining, well, not complaining, but I was observing that Mike was now two episodes ahead of me, but I'm already making up one.
Yes, you are.
We'll be even again.
Leaving town, taking breaks.
It's a competition, obviously.
So Mike's just on vacation this week.
Yeah, he went to Boulder this weekend to see the family.
I didn't know if he was just taking a weekend off from having to, podcast, or if he was just, or if he was actually traveling.
No, he actually traveled this time.
Oh, now you got your toy.
Is that
huh?
the dog? Now I feel like I need a dog here so I could yell at it to stop biting toys or stop going outside and coming inside. And
yeah, Mabel's like, "Oh, Harley's not there this time. I gotta make up for it. Do the job of two dogs today.
I need a wife to like blow snot all through the throughout the episode.
Still yell at Barb.
Yeah, we can still yell. Barb, get out! Just get out! Blow your nose outside.
Exactly.
See? We're doing the Lord's work.
You're doing the Lord's work here. You don't have
my favorite. You don't my favorite that. Quote of all time.
That's right. You like that one, Rob?
Oh my God! First time you said that, Daryl, I'm just like walking around the house, listening. I think I was doing some cleaning or something, and you said that. I just bust out laughing.
It makes anything you're doing important when you throw doing the Lord's work at.
Exactly.
Come here, Mabel. Let me see that.
That's what I've learned over the years, the being married and divorced. Just say, doing Lord's work. And then she said, I hate you. And then I'm like, all right, you don't believe in me doing the Lord's work, I gotta go. That's how it's gonna be. I'm saving the world, woman.
Exactly.
I don't have time for you to be thinking and breathing and sneezing. I don't know what you think this is. You take it with the marching people over there. You don't do that in this house.
Those were some impressive crowds yesterday.
Oh my gosh, it was.
All over the place.
Yeah. Well, I had some friends there. They were taking pictures while they were in the crowd.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know a couple old friends from high school. Mm-hmm. Were up in Toronto doing theirs.
Yeah, it was all over the world. They had places all over the world. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. In honor of women and women's rights, I love women. I made a great 8-hour slow cooking spaghetti sauce.
Oh, very nice.
It was delicioso. If I could bring it to them, I would. But it wasn't enough for everybody. That's too many people. I didn't have enough for everybody. So.
I thought of you the other day, Daryl, because I ate some pasta and I ate the whole. I used the whole can of sauce. The entire jar of sauce. I ate a lot of pasta.
I didn't eat it all the sauce, but I used the whole thing too. I made it. I cooked it for 8 hours on the slow cooker.
Wow!
Every flavor nice. That's in it, like I had thyme in it, I had bay leaves, garlic, everything, all the good stuff, and I let it cook for 8 hours.
Wow!
Yeah.
You guys, I have a secret.
What?
I've never had homemade sauce.
What?
Wow.
What is wrong like with
what,
you?
What Chris was just describing, that's what I've had. Prego, ragu, any of that stuff.
I mean, you've never had like Italian at a restaurant or something where they make their own or something?
You know what, I guess maybe, but I should say I've never had homemade.
You never make homemade sauce is what you mean.
Yeah, like my parents never did that. I've never been at family member's house where that's what they're making.
Well, I didn't.
I mean, no one in my family is Italian. All right.
Well, no, my family isn't exactly Italian, unless we're the black Italians. But I did it as I had a taste for it as a young age. See, this is retrosection. We're talking about our children. So this is when we're children and stuff. So this is a retrosection of it.
Exactly.
I had a love for it. Like, I started with the canned spaghetti. Everybody did. Boyardee, unless you grew up rich. But then after a while, when the taste buds come in, you're like, this is shit. I want real spaghetti. And then you start making your own and then learning from other people and... You know, once you start having like that you know really good Italian food,
you can never go back.
You can't go back to the regular shit. No, you can't.
I believe it.
It's never the same. It is never the same. Oh, I loved it.
I don't mind jar sauce, but
no, jar sauce is fine. You just have to. I just have to add a lot of shit to it. Like jar doesn't really have all the good stuff. You know, they're adding an extra. Like the Italian season, like in the meat, you gotta really season the meat really well, and then let the sauce like sit, let it cook for a long time. The longer the sauce cooks, the better it is. Then easy
to
do.
It just sounds so good.
Oh my god, it is, man. It's just, I mean, I had carrots in it. I cut up carrots and celery, put that in there. Oh, it was just so fucking good. I had some this morning. Don't tell anybody. I had some this morning for breakfast, and it was even better because the sauce had just sat in it even longer. Oh, it's so good. So fucking good. I'm going to have to freeze that
shit. I'm okay with regular food for breakfast. I don't think anything wrong with that. For some reason, though, I don't really like to eat breakfast at other times of day. Like, I'll have, leftover pizza or something for breakfast or something, but... People get super into having breakfast for dinner, and I just don't like doing that.
Christopher, I could have breakfast all the time.
See, I just,
pancakes, see, bacon, eggs. I don't care. What time.
I like it. I can have dinner all day long. Doesn't matter what time. Like I like eating leftover food if it's really good. Just throwing it in there. That's probably why I got fat and. And then you start to get your cholesterol and all that stuff up, so you can't eat that shit like you want to.
Yeah.
But if I could, if I had a Wolverine body, And it healed itself all the time. It wouldn't be about cigarettes and no. that type of shit. It'd be all that damn good food.
Do you know what mine would be? All about donuts. Donuts.
Oh,
all
donuts
the time.
Too. Donuts yep. too. I'd all be the time. Killing donuts, man. Dunkin' Donuts. Mm-hmm. I could kill some fucking donuts. Some glazed donuts. Some Boston cream donuts. Some ah. That and coffee, because coffee is my cigarette, I guess.
Yeah,
because I can drink coffee out of, you know, like that's the morning thing. After sex, I even like coffee. I truly like coffee after sex. I don't know why.
Instead of a cigarette,
I will drink a cup of coffee. I will get up and go to Dunkin' Donuts.
There you go.
And get a cup of coffee.
Like Chris, have you ever had Paula's Donuts?
Yes.
Okay. These donuts are local here to the
ridiculous
Buffalo area, Daryl. And
damn,
the donuts are literally the size of like a small cake.
Damn, and they got a, it's just donut. Over there.
They are little, small. Little it's little not. Donut. They're not just the size of a small cake. They're also the contents of a small cake.
That's selfish, man. Yeah. They should bring it over here too.
They're ridiculous.
Why are they selfish?
It's so good. I mean, you've got to have some good local places around there, though. I guess,
not
right?
donuts, man. In Queens, they don't really have a lot. Like bakeries, that is one thing Queens does not have a lot of is bakeries. We don't.
Wow.
Even yeah. like you have like the it's bullshit bakeries and you know like in the shopping stops and stuff like that, the big grocery stores. But that's yeah. bullshit bakery. That's not really. I don't consider that like a bakery. I'm talking about a small mom and pop shop bakery. That's good shit. No, we don't have it.
Oh my god, this place it's insane.
So
they're,
bad.
And they're not like any more expensive than Dunkin' Donuts.
But no, they're like, not expensive.
Literally,
they're not
like three times expensive. The size.
Yeah.
They're too much for me. That's a case where I'll do the Bill Bomer and eat half of one cuz I ate a whole Paula's donut one time and I didn't even eat lunch.
Oh.
I felt like I had
if
a
you
rock
have two of them, you literally aren't hungry 5 hours later for lunch. But one time I had three, Daryl. Uh-huh. I was sick
oh my God.
To my stomach.
Oh,
I mean, not
yeah,
really,
I would think so.
But I felt sick. I felt really sick, like for the rest of the day.
You probably had, I can't even imagine the amount of calories you had.
Well, and sugar. Cigarettes. And the amount of sugar?
Sugar, oh my God.
Oh,
yeah,
that's sugar.
You probably shaved like 3 or 4 months off your life when you did that.
Oh, man. You know, I got the sugar, so I can't do that shit too much. I got to calm down on that. So, but if I could, I don't like needles, so I got to. That keeps me from going too crazy with donuts. But
sure.
If I didn't have to worry about that needle, I'd eat the fuck out of them donuts. I'd probably
fuck
a donut and eat the other donuts as I watch me fuck the other donut. Just because
I'm trying to be better. My entire immediate family has now been diagnosed with diabetes, except for me.
It's rough, man.
I need to just be on top of it now.
I just but,
like other God. My both my parents later in life, you know, they both recently got it in the past like 5 years.
Man. Yeah, my grandfather had it when I was a kid. I used to watch him. Shoot the insulin every day.
Yeah.
Just watch as a kid. I used to just watch it. And I'd be like, oof, I don't want that. It was great. There were many things that kept me from ever wanting to be a drug addict. Like, they all smoked. Like, a lot of my grandfather smoked. My mother used to smoke. And my uncle smoked. And just all of that made me go, you know what? I'm good. I never have to. I never thought to myself, I can't wait to get old enough to smoke. It was the other switch. I guess my disobedience switch went off, and it was like, I don't ever have to smoke a cigarette ever in my life, and I'm good.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the needles and stuff. It's like, I can't see myself wanting to put the needle in the arm.
Right.
I don't even like it when the doctor has to do something. When they take blood and shit, I deal with it. Uh-huh. But I don't even like it then. And they're supposed to do that shit. I hate it. So, it can have that shit. That is not the bomb. But, boy, if I could... It's just... My addiction is food. Food, sex, and porn. And comics.
There you go.
Food, sex, and porn, and comics.
And comics. Yeah, don't forget comics.
Yeah. I cannot give those things up. No. Cannot. It's just no way.
I think if I was Wolverine, my thing would probably be beer.
Beer, yeah.
Yeah,
which is a Wolverine thing to do.
Yeah,
but absolutely. I'd just be.
He drinks it all the time, which is a normal thing.
Yeah, that'd be my normal. That'd be my water. I'd just be drinking beer all the time. He doesn't smoke
cigars anymore either, right?
No, they took that away. They took
No, he's been censored.
Marvel? I forgot what year they did it. What was it, like 2007, 8, I think, maybe?
It's a Disney thing, though, I know.
Him and... Well, it was before Disney. It was him and The Thing. Those are the two that it affected the most. They took out the cigarettes.
And Nick Fury.
And Nick Fury, right. Well, I think he's smoked a couple of times since... Well, before he went to the robe, before he got that stupid robe.
Yeah.
Shit that they recently did, but I mean, I think even after that they had threw it in there without saying anything. They just kind of threw it in, and he was still smoking. And they didn't.
Maybe because they're like, well, we got two Nick Furies, and he's not the one in the movies anyway. So
right, we're gonna kill him off anyway. Smoke. And they did it worse. They didn't even kill him off. They just put him in a robe, turned him old, and made him crazy, and left him.
And I didn't read any of that, so I totally missed it.
Oh my god, it was horrible.
Eye thing, right, with the Watcher?
It was the eye, yeah. There was the whole thing now that he was... They backtracked. They basically said all these years he's been like the galaxy hitman for the Earth, where he goes and any threats, he's like the hitman. He comes in, takes them out. You never know what happened. Like all the little threats and stuff. And I was like, ugh, man. Oh. I don't mind a retcon of something as long as it's going to make it better. If it improves the character's story, then I'm good with it. But I don't think that did. I'll give you a
perfect example. But Bucky.
Yeah, totally. I was
big time skeptical. I'm like, seriously, you're going to bring Bucky back?
Totally.
And it was done perfectly, beautifully.
Even Cap's story of not using guns, because I always thought that was bullshit when I was a kid reading Cap, and I read Cap like... I read some early Cap and stayed with Cap. I still read it today. And they had the thing of him not using guns. I always used to think, but in war, you can't just throw a shield around and survive war unless you're bulletproof. And he only had enhanced strength.
Right.
When he first got the serum, he had enhanced strength too, like the movie. but then they kind of went away. They kind of took it away. And he just had he just at the peak condition of a human thing. But he was never bulletproof. So I'm like, how do you get through war and not ever have to shoot? Right. Like, that was just ridiculous. It just little ridiculous things that just didn't make sense. And I like
they made a big deal about it, too. It's not like they they called a lot of attention to it. Because one of the first Captain America comics I ever read when I was a kid was right after he used the gun against a terrorist, and it was a big deal, and everybody, like, the public, he killed the terrorist, and it was a big deal. It's funny to read that now. It's just like, no one would even care if he did that, but they really built it up, too.
It used to be the superheroes that they would make a big deal about were killing would be Superman, Batman, Cap, and Spider-Man. Like, that is, like, a big deal. Like, if you... Because even Iron Man, they kind of got away with it. He killed somebody for on purpose. The first time was in the Serpent War, which ran through the annuals. And his annual, he teamed up with... If you can find it, he teams up with Namor. It's on the app, I think, still. I think it's on...
I've got all those, but I don't remember anything.
There was a scene at the end where the guy is, like, pretty much saying, you might have stopped us, but we will still continue to win because you didn't stop us all type of thing. Mm-hmm. And he puts the repulsor ray up and he shoots through the chair.
Oh,
it was a scene of him just shooting through the chair, if I remember right. And you know, he had to have killed it, but it was so off panel that they could probably always say, nah, he didn't really kill him. But the guy just slumps down and then you don't see anything else about it. Like see him do it. And then when I noticed that, it stuck with me. Like that was one when Morrison did Cyclops, when he killed the mutant who was suffering, he was dying. And that was the first arc that Morrison did. And he had this mutant who had like three faces. And they were going to pick him up and take him back to the mansion and stuff. And he was dying. He was just suffering. And they had captured him, like the new Master Mold had kind of came because of Cassandra Nova, the twin of Xavier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
oh, right.
Cyclops made a decision to, he said, look, he said, the pain will be gone in a minute. Like, he said, you'll be okay in a minute. And he told him, look me in the eyes, and he kills him. He shoots him right into the, he shoots him straight in it, and he's brain dead. He kills him. Mm. And that was such a poignant scene, because he basically committed murder, even though it was to put him out of his misery, because the guy was dying slowly, because the Sentinel had pretty much burned him, so he's dying from burning. Like, he had his body was just totally burned, and he was just dead. That's the one of the worst ways to go, is to die from like third to fourth degree burns. And that was a major thing. Like, that was a big deal too in comics. Like, wow, like, this is when Cyclops really started to mature the character a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That was some real shit. Like, that was a big deal, because other than that, it was always Wolverine was the killer. Like,
right,
you let him do it. Like, every time like Storm or somebody would be mad or something, or something, they would want to take a dude out because they had done something horrible, horrific to them, Wolverine would be like, I do it so you don't have to do it,
right?
And it'd be off panel until they had the Marauders in Uncanny X-Men. When Cyclops, when Colossus grabs one of the Marauders who spins, and he throws stars as he spins, and he was just killing all these Morlocks, poor Morlocks, and like, just out of anger, just he grabs him by the neck and he keeps spinning, and cracks his neck, like, just from grabbing him, and he just boom, and that's it, he's done. Like, and then Thor killed the Prism because he smashed his body, because it was made out of just the Prism crystal, and he punches him so hard he smashes his body. Like, that's basically like, we're gonna have them kill. Like, they were like, we're ready to darken the X-Men a little bit, so we're gonna have the newbies. You know, this is old when Colossus and them are the newbies, actually commit murder, and that's what they made them do. And slowly. I mean, they dealt with that for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had to... Like, they hated them. So, like, some of them, it haunted them for years. Like, it...
Right.
It was really something they had to deal with throughout the book.
Oh, I love those stories.
Yeah, it was significant enough that they could make a story out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It meant something.
It really meant something.
Well, there's so much character development.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Stories had time to, you know, they had time to be told.
That's exactly what it is. They had the time to take to tell the stories.
So it worked. So what are some stories, some comics that we that you guys picked? Who wants to go first?
Chris, why do you mind going first?
I don't mind.
Okay.
I was gonna say about Atlantis Attacks. You sent me on a little Google a session there, because I wanted to see what the Iron Man one looked like, because I was trying to remember, those came out around the time when I still didn't get to the comic shop regularly. I kind of had to grab what I could find, and I was looking at the covers of which ones.
It's a cover with Namor recognized. And him. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think Namor is like arms crossed, like he's hanging on a cross. And he's kind of floating. He's flying up from the water, and Iron Man is flying towards the missiles.
Yeah, it describes it pretty well, actually. Yeah. Is, but I didn't have that one. I definitely had the X-Men Annual, which was Part 4. I definitely had the Spectacular Spider-Man one, which had Cloak and Dagger in it. Spectacular Spider-Man, and then definitely had Daredevil, which was right after that, which has Spider-Man and Doctor Strange on the cover with Daredevil. That was a Ron Friends, Joe Sinnott cover, apparently.
Cool stuff. I love those covers.
Yeah. The New Mutants, that one was familiar. They did have some, I thought it was annuals only, but they did have some regular issues that tied in.
Yeah,
it looks like just a couple. Because this Avengers West Coast issue 56 is one that tied into it. It doesn't say so on the cover, but they included it here on my comic shop. And I remember I had this issue because I remember this cover. It was a John Byrne cover where Scarlet Witch is huge and she's holding the team. The team's like dangling from her hand.
Yeah, when he
Iron
took
Man
over.
And Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. Wonder Man, and mm-hmm. yeah, that was cool.
That was the beginning of the taking of her sanity when John Byrne
took
over.
Yeah, because she's.
They took Vision away from her, like took his emotions away, because they disassembled him, and when they put him back together, eventually they couldn't put back the emotion part because he got the emotions from learning, you know, just from the experience. So he had lost that, and he pretty much was just he was Vision in memory, like he knew all the he had all the memories of stuff that happened, but none of the emotional context of it.
And they pretty much, he just kind of did that himself voluntarily just last year, too, right?
Who would be?
Didn't Vision just do the same thing?
He had a race.
Was it Avengers Zero or something like that?
I think it's in the Tom King one where he had, or before that. No, I think it was like a one-shot Avengers
Yeah,
story.
That one-shot that was introducing all the
To introduce him. Characters. Right, right. And he did something like, they said it like his mind, he had too much memory. Like it was too much. Yep. It was to the point where it was overloading because he didn't have enough capacity to hold all the emotional beats.
Exactly. So, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. They never really connected with that though, because even
not at all.
Even Tom in the Vision book, he didn't get into that, and he did remember Scarlet Witch because they talked about it through the book when she was on it, when Wanda was in it. So I don't even know. Like it was one of those things where it was like we were going to do something with it, but nah, never mind. I guess.
Yeah.
Type of thing. That was funny how they did that. Never. And I kept waiting for something to happen with that, and they just never connected with it again. It's
no.
Weird.
I'm very down on the current Avengers title, too. It just hasn't grabbed
me. Oh, that's a hard read, man.
I don't know what it is, but
I'm sorry.
I've got to cut back for financial reasons.
Yeah, she's mad, too. Dog's mad.
Yeah, Mabel doesn't like it anymore than I do.
When did she drop the book?
Chris, a while ago, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So I'm gonna whatever's coming from DCBS is it, and then I'm not reading that anymore. I just have to save some money.
Yeah, I'll be done when the code stop.
Yeah.
I'll be done around that time. So
around the same time.
Yeah, and I'm still on the Marvel Unlimited, so I can just wait the 6 months. It doesn't hurt me. Wait.
Yeah, you know, I might actually start looking at that because I see you can get a whole year. So what, like $70 or something?
Yeah, I got it. I think when I got it, it was like $50 because it was like Christmas. Sometimes they have a special during Christmas.
Yeah,
and you can, if you do it then and do the little code, you got to put in the little code they give you during Christmas, and then you get it for like $50. And I think that's what I did both times.
That's a crazy. That really is a crazy deal.
You can't, I mean, you're practically telling me just to do that. Like, you're better off unless you're a collector. Like, unless you need to have the physical copy in your hand, no matter what.
Right.
If you're not that person, you're basically saying, why don't you just wait? wait the 6 months and read it then.
Yeah, because if you pay for it all at once, even if you do pay 70 something. What's that like? It's like $5 a month or something.
Yeah,
to read everything instead of.
Yeah. You think about that. That's a comic book.
Yeah,
so that's a number one issue from Marvel. It's $4.99.
Not even comparable. Like,
yeah,
the amount of money it would like if you read everything that they put out.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be hundreds of dollars.
I mean, it's $4.99 an issue, man. Unless you do like DCBS and stuff like that. Yep. But if not, that's like. That's not like it is. It's $4.99 for some of those books. I mean,
yeah,
that is a lot. I mean, I don't know what Mike's. I don't even know what Mike's bill looks like a month for comics. I mean, because he gets so much. I mean, just his Marvel bill alone, probably. And he, you know, because he reads a lot. I don't think he reads all of Marvel, but just the Marvel books alone would probably cost him. You know, over probably be $200-$300.
Oh my god! Yeah,
at the DCBS price.
Yeah, at the DCBS price. Yeah, at the DCBS price because what they do about 86 titles a month, I think, a little bit more depending on a miniseries here and there. DC is not that far behind with how much they ship a title.
When they get rid of the bundles for DC, I'll be dropping just a handful of titles.
Well, they're kind of encouraging to do digital too. To have the thing where I don't know how retailers are going to deal with that, because they announced that they're going to up the price on the $2.99 books.
Yeah, the monthly ones.
But only the print.
Yep.
And then
did they? I didn't.
Yeah, only the
print. Yeah, the monthly books are going to be $3.99 in print.
But in digitally, they're still going to be $2.99. They're not going
to. Oh, that lasted long.
They're not going up the dollar, and they're giving you a digital code. They're doing. I guess it feels like they're trolling Marvel. All the $3.99 books are going to get a free digital code of that book.
And then
all the digital. They must be really trying to do something with digital, because then all the digital. Digitally, you get all the books stay at $2.99.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. So,
yeah,
it's a strange. Like, Marvel is going. I mean, their focus is heavily now supposed to be. All of this is supposed to be about the retailer. That's why they're doing the taking the codes away and giving you codes for books that they think they want you to read, as opposed to what you would choose to read. And the prices are going to still be as high as they are. But they call it a retail incentive. Thing that was the promotion on it, and then Marvel seems to be, I mean, in DC's doing the opposite, where they're kind of pushing towards being beneficial to the digital only people. So
yeah,
it is I don't know, it'd be weird to see what those sales look like in April and May, you know, in the spring when they do these initiatives, when they change up these initiatives, but we'll see. We'll see what the deal is. But I had one of the books that I had read, speaking of Uncanny X-Men, because me and Mike go toe to toe with his love of the current X books and my hate of the current X books. And I went, like, this is easy for me to go back, and I went back to Uncanny. This is probably like the 20th time I've read this issue, but it doesn't matter. I still do it. It's X-Men 167, Volume 1, and that's by Chris Claremont and Paul Smith. And this is the issue before, like, at the end of this, Xavier goes away.
Is this the end of the Brood Saga, or the beginning?
Yeah,
of
it's the end of the Brood Saga, where the Queen has
that is good stuff.
It opens with, like, it's so fast. Like, it opens with Cyclops running into the mansion and just beating the shit out of all the new mutants. And you're like, why is he shooting and knocking them down? And, like, and he's like, you know, like, I don't want to do this. Like, he's the internal monologue. It's like, I can't stop now. And you have to, you know, keep going and have to reach Xavier. And you think it's Cyclops the one that's crazy and taken over by some entity, and he's going to take out Xavier, but the whole thing is Xavier's been infected by the Brood, and if they get him fully, I mean, he's the most powerful telepath on the Earth. You know, the Brood with that kind of power is just invincible, man. It'd be the most dangerous creatures on the Earth, and that's the whole thing of them trying to, the X-Men are trying to stop him, and the New Mutants don't know any of this. And they don't have time to tell them, because Xavier would influence their minds. So they're basically, like, just plowing through them. And then the mutants that are involved are Cannonball, Wolfsbane, Karma, Psyche, which is Danny Moonstone, because her name changed, like, every day.
They finally gave up and just started calling him Moonstar.
They did. That's why you have to be like, you'll be like, what? Who was that? And you have to say, just Danny Moonstone. You'll be like, oh, okay.
She's the Donna Troy of the Marvel Universe.
Pretty much. Iliana is in it. And then they had the Lilandra shows up. And then the Starjammers are all there. Eventually, they come into the story a little bit later. And the X-Men, they have Cyclops, Storm, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Sprite, Colossus, and, of course, Professor Xavier.
Yeah, there's another one, Kitty Pride, which went through Kitty a Pride. Bunch of different names.
Kitty Pride.
Now they just call her Kitty Pride. Yeah. Shadowcat.
I always liked Shadowcat.
Shadowcat was the best one.
I think it was the best one. I don't know why they changed it, but...
She went through a lot of costumes, too. She's got a pretty funny costume in this issue.
She was the one that was like, oh, fuck it, I'll just change the costume. I'll change suits when I want to. You know, like, don't y'all dudes do laundry? I mean, why y'all don't change your clothes? Why are you wearing the same... Like, Wolverine, he probably smells like beer and ass and doesn't care, because he'll drink, he'll do benders. He'll do days of just drinking, just all day. He doesn't give a shit. But everybody else, it's like, y'all can change it up a little bit. You don't have to stay in the same outfit all the time. But it was such a good, like, there's scenes, like, I love it. Like, what I love reading it digitally is sometimes I will see a scene that I like so much that I will take a picture of it and share it on Facebook, because it's just such a great scene. Like, there's a scene of, like, Wolverine, like, punching the shit out of Sunspot. But he has the claws down, because he know he can kill the dude, but he's trying not to. He just wants to knock the boy out. But he's like punching him in the face. And Sunspot's like, what the fuck? What did I do? Why are they attacking us? We don't know. But at the end of it, like, they get to the last part of the fight, and then they get Xavier down, and he's like, just kill me. He's like, when he gets control of himself, he's like, just kill me. And of course, like, Cyclops is like, oh, hell no. Wolverine is like, it's time, let's do it, let's kill him, you know, just put him out of his misery, he doesn't want to do this. And, you know, and Cyclops is like, I have hope, I can't do this, I believe. And this is not that bullshit Cyclops are stuck with now. They've destroyed him. Yes, I said it, Mike, on your show. They destroyed him. Destroyed the character of Cyclops. He'll be back.
And
for
the record, I totally agree with Daryl.
He'll be back to tell me it's all great and wonderful and it's great. Right now, I'm just being pouty.
See, I'm going to say, and I could be wrong, but he wasn't invested in the X-Men back when
X-Men, he's not. This, like, is all
me and you back in the 80s, reading it then, right? Mm-mm. So now, it doesn't have that same...
It's all gravy. It's like me reading, reading The Phantom Stranger, for example. I don't care. Like, I've never been invested in The Phantom Stranger. I just, you know, like, I've only read, most of my issues of reading The Phantom Stranger has been when he guest stars in a book that I'm reading, and he's done that a lot in all the books that I've read over the years. But to read a book of just him, he's too powerful for me. It's no fun reading that. Mm-hmm. So I never, like, Magic, I kind of, you know, when they're too powerful, I kind of zone out, unless the creator, some creator that I really like, and they tell a kind of a different story with it. But
they're challenging characters to write, because Superman falls into the same difficulty for some writers, because if you don't have the rules and the boundaries, it makes it hard for the writers to create conflict, and that's interesting.
Absolutely,
totally.
But yeah, I like, I pulled this issue up digitally while you're talking about it. I like, right under the scene you're talking about with Wolverine and Sunspot, it's pretty brutal with Nightcrawler teleports in behind Danny and Karma and just smacks their heads together.
and that hurts. That's happened to me before. That shit hurts.
The adult X-Men kicking the crap out of the New Mutants. Just pretty
kicking their asses. And this kind of shows what... Because eventually, like, these stories will kind of change, because as Xavier gets taken away, like, his body has to be put into... cloned into another... His brain is put into another body, which is a clone of him. And that's when you see Xavier walking.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that's how he walks.
That's how he gets his legs back, and then he goes off into space with his lady love, Lilandra, and he's gone for a long time, and that's when Magneto is kind of brought back, into the good guy side. Like, they'll have the X-Men versus Avengers fight, which is basically the government wants to take him to task for the people that were killed.
Russians, the big trial, I think that was issue 200 or something like that.
Which ties back all the way to the first X-Men Adventure where they fight Magneto because he sank a Russian sub. So now they call, like, imagine calling, like, this one, love continuity. But that's when they pull all that back and they're like, well, finally he is going to pay for his crimes. And he goes to court. You know how long the issue, like, the amount of time in real life those stories were told? Like, it's amazing how they pull it out.
You're talking, like, 20, 25 years.
20 years, yeah.
Yeah. So it's
because just, 1963.
Amazing. Like, it was just... Yeah. And to have them going at it and the conflict between the teams. And it's like, but he's a good guy now. And having the X-Men going, damn, this dude used to be Hitler to us. Like, he was the one that tried to kill us. The first person that tried to kill us, really. You know, the first villain. And now we're sitting here fighting the freaking Avengers for him.
To protect him.
To protect him. It's like, this is crazy. And Wolverine, of course, who would have killed Magneto. And they say it in the story, like Magneto's like, you would have killed me. Like, there are times you tried to kill me. Multiple times you tried to kill me. And now you're fighting tooth and nail to keep me alive. And all he could say is just smoking a cigarette is like, shit happens. Times change. That's basically, he doesn't reflect. Logan is not someone who sits there reflecting on all that stuff. He's just, you're an ally now. We take care of our own, and that's just the way it is. And it's a good story. If anybody you have never read that, read it.
Like that is a must. Read. Our friend Paul Tessner.
Yes, that guy.
I kept he would always ask for. He would always ask for certain stories, and he would complain all the time. Oh, read Claremont's X-Men. Mm-hmm. It's like that's like 200 issues. I'm not gonna. So I gave him this specific arc.
He
didn't like it.
See, that's why I don't fall into that trap with him when he asks me about weird stuff. I go, you know what? I'm not gonna fall into this trap. I ask, what do you feel like reading? And then, like, there's certain things he'd better off reading, like Superman Red Son.
Yeah.
Or All-Star Superman, I suggested to him, too. Like, that's a contained thing, and I said it's not something when you have to worry about any kind of continuity. It's just established this is a Superman. He's been Superman for years. You don't need to jump back into issue 140 of this issue to kind of understand where the story's coming from. It's just he's here, and just read it, and that's the stuff he needs. That's the books he needs. I don't think he will enjoy the books that are like really invested in a lot of history.
No.
I don't think
that's the books for him. And he didn't like the way that it's written too, with all the captions.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't. I mean, I understand. I mean, that's fine. You just don't like that thing, type of thing. Right. But like for me, that was.
Oh, I love
that. I grew up with that, so it doesn't bother me at all.
Doesn't bother me at all, and I kind of can put my mind into the time I read it. Like I can put my mind into when it was written. A lot of times, it has to be really something so off-putting that I just can't put my mind into.
But this is good writing.
Yeah, it's good writing.
I gotta say, Daryl, just with your pick too. I had mentioned this before, but I had the first X-Men book I ever bought was like number 160, at the convenience store, and so I bought like maybe three or four issues after that. So it started up the Brood Saga, and then of course like the next like whatever issue it was, 164, 165, I just didn't have. So I didn't read the end of this until probably 10 years later.
Wow.
But I love it. I absolutely love this story. This is the story along with that. I think 160 is the one where they go to limbo for the first time. That's when ages like 10 years. So that was my very first story. And between that and the Brood Saga, that's what made me all in on X-Men.
Yeah, my thing with not liking Limbo now, when they're in Limbo, is that Limbo was never made to be long-term. That was a special place where when you go to Limbo, something it means something. Like, her going to Limbo that first time and then losing all those years, that's something that haunted that character for eons. She was basically in hell by herself. Yeah. And there were things that, like, they allude to stuff, but they never say it, really. But they allude to, there were horrible things that happened to her in Limbo.
Mm-hmm. As a and that miniseries is very good to me, too.
Yeah, that miniseries. I almost reread that again like, when I was looking for some other stuff on my on the Unlimited app. I almost pulled that up, but I didn't have enough time to read that before I had to do something. But, yeah, I mean, like that, when she would tell her brother, there's shit that happened to me that I can't even tell you.
Right.
Because it's just too horrible.
I recall that, because they strongly imply it's stuff that he could not put in a comic book in the 1980s. They could not talk about what happened to her there. So it was effective because it just lets your own imagination fill in the blanks, you know, instead of just spelling it out.
Yeah.
Which they couldn't do if they wanted to, but I think it was a good technique anyways to just leave it,
it was perfect
unsaid, you know, because it's always, what you can imagine is always worse than what they spell it's out.
So much better to do it the way they did it.
That's a good
classic. Which one did you read? What was it, 166 or 167?
167.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good cover.
Yeah.
And the very next issue is a classic one, too. The Professor Xavier is a jerk.
Yeah.
issue. Another classic one.
That has always been a good
Madeline
one.
Madeline Pryor, too, according to the database. I don't remember.
Yeah, that's because it. you meet, if I remember right, Madeline, like, he runs into him.
Her, like, doing the plane thing?
Yeah, because he's left. Like, Cyclops left for a while to find himself because, you know, Jean was dead by then.
Yeah.
She went through the whole thing of sacrificing herself or something and whatnot. So he just went off. He's like, I can't be an X-Men anymore for a while. He just left.
Yeah.
And while he left, he met her. He met this woman who reminds him of Jean. Like, almost, she's a little bit drawn, a little bit different. So you can be like, I don't think she's a clone. But she looks so much like her, though, with the red hair and the eyes and stuff where you're like, is he losing his fucking mind, or is somebody actually an enemy messing with him? Is it, you know, like one of the mastermind or something, like trying to do some shit to him or whatever? And you don't know, like you kind of, but then it goes for a longer period of time. After a while, you kind of accept Madeline as part of the group, you know, that relationship. You kind of accept it, but he never stopped loving Jean, though.
God, so good.
He couldn't get
over it. Well, didn't Claremont say at one point that he originally just intended her to be just a woman that happened to look a lot like Jean, and that was it? Just he wanted to deal with that issue?
This is the funny thing. Back then, the writers pretty much fought each other, and editors were kind of like at the whim of the A-list writers. So John Byrne and Claremont were kind of not cool with each other anymore, and he had stopped working with him with the X-Men. And basically, there was a big battle of Claremont wanted Jean to be dead. I think John Byrne was the one that wanted Jean to be, like, him and editorial kind of wanted Jean to die. Mm-hmm. And Claremont wanted it to be a little different. He wanted her to be, you know, that she wasn't dead, or she, you know, somehow she'll come back or whatever. And
because I think Byrne said you got to follow through with it.
Right, like, you have to follow through with the death. It. Like, you can't have her. She murdered. She.
I think Shooter said that as well.
Yeah, he was.
Shooter said
too.
If you're going to do this, then it's going to stick.
Right.
Maybe it was him.
She destroyed planets. I mean, she murdered, even though they weren't, you know, you don't know them, they're aliens, but she still murdered millions and millions of people, and they were like, she has to pay for that.
Yeah, you can't.
So he was going to try to give her a cop out, and but that didn't happen. They just had to go with she killed herself, and that's it. Left it at that. And then, but he got his wish later, though, when they got X Factor, and he had it.
Yeah,
it was never her in the first place.
Exactly.
It was the cocoon. When she came out of the water, they were saying that the entity, like, made a psychic imprint off of her.
Right.
Took her form.
Right.
Took
so her basically, form.
And it wasn't her.
So from like issue, whatever that was, mm-hmm. 90, whatever, 6, mm-hmm. 8, 98, whatever that was, it was not Jean Grey.
That was that not Jean Grey.
It's right. Actually Phoenix Force.
Retconned all of it. Like that's yep. It was still a good retcon though.
No, it was awesome.
I think it worked.
It worked very well.
It worked pretty well, but it was a retcon nonetheless. Like
yep. It was kind of funny because they brought her back through. It was two issues. It was an issue of Avengers and then Fantastic Four.
Yep.
Yeah, that was actually the story where they found her.
That was the importance of Fantastic Four. Like, things would happen. Like they were the scientists group. Like when Fantastic Four would come in because you needed Reed's brain to figure something out. Like that's why, you know, like you could have these little guest starring roles of different books, and it worked so well. Like the Avengers found the cocoon, right? In one mm-hmm. of their adventures, they see this cocoon, and they're like, "I'm not fucking with it." We call the big brains. So they call Reed. Reed comes in. He, you know, like he goes.
Was John Byrne doing the Fantastic Four at that time or no?
I think.
Or was he already off that book?
He might have still been on it at that time.
If I can figure it out.
He might have still been on it, if I'm not mistaken.
Issue 286 is, John Byrne. Still John Byrne.
Yeah, he was still. Yeah.
That was part of it too.
Yeah.
286. Yeah, that was the lead into it. Even says on the cover of mm-hmm. 286, it continues here, X Factor. Mm-hmm. So that was specifically to launch that group.
Yeah, it mattered, man. And once and then when he got, I remember when you see the panel, well, he's at dinner with his wife and kids, and he gets that call from Angel. Because Warren calls, and it's funny because everybody's in love with Jean. Everybody loves the hot redhead, right? And he's like, well, maybe I have a chance. And this bastard just has a girlfriend, though. Like, everybody's with somebody, and they're like, she's alive, man. That's my chance. Like, I never got that chance when we were kids. But, you know, maybe there is a chance for us. And then he was like, well, I can't do that, you know, like, you know, Scott is my boy, and I can't do that to my boy. No mention of, you know, like, his girlfriend. It's Kurt Candy, his current girlfriend. Fuck her. The hell with her. I'd dump her. But let me make it right. I got to tell Scott. And when he tells Scott, like, he just... And this is not the... This is the time where they had phones with cords. And he answers that phone, and his head just drops. And even though he has his glasses on, his red visor glasses, you could tell in his eyes, he's like, this totally fucking devastated. He's like, damn it. Like, I want to go to her so bad, and he does. And he had just, like, kind of reconciled everything. Like, he's gotten over it. He had this adventure with her, and he's kind of did this whole thing, a life and death experience. And he's like, you know, Jean is my past. I have to move past, you know, I have to move mm-hmm. forward. And embrace a new life, and you know, you got that and the kid and all that, and he just, when Gene, he was like, Gene's live, oh, gotta go, yep. And he leaves.
Oh yeah,
and he doesn't come back. Like he leaves and goes in X Factor, he leaves and goes to see her, and she doesn't, of course, remember any of this stuff after she died, so mm-hmm. she doesn't know about all this stuff, and he agrees to be, you know, to make this team, because Warren is like, we could do this thing where, because they think the X-Men are villains and they're dead. I think they kind of die in the Siege Perilous, so they think they never die, but they think that they're gone when they mm-hmm. went through that thing. And they're, so there's no one to help mutants now. They don't have that. No, I think they were still alive, but now that they're running with Magneto, the newer X-Men were kind of pretty much separated because of ideology. Like the original X-Men were like, I could never fuck with a team that would have Magneto as the headmaster of. Like I couldn't. They just were like, we don't fuck with them. As far as we're concerned, they're bad guys now. We don't mess with them. And Warren thought we need someone to help mutants. You know, as they're being, all these mutants are out in the world and they're getting, you know, captured and stuff, and there's no one there to catch them. We could fake it and pretend that we're... And this is Cameron Hodges' behind-the-scenes thing. And how long did that take before he revealed his true nature? Like, that's a lot of storytelling.
Yeah.
All this. And the way they set that up where, Angel gets tricked. He's like, yeah, we'll pretend to be... work for the government as bad guys, and our thing is, we're like exterminators. We come and capture bad mutants. We take them. And then you don't know that they're taking them to protect them, but that's just the deal, and that's right. The team they agreed to do, and they had to pretend, they had to cover up that they were even mutants.
Exterminators.
Had to call themselves exterminators. and then they were exterminators, and then X-Factor would come in as the bad guy mutants. And that would be, they would be in their colored, different color suits with the X's on it. So they would play multiple roles. But yeah, that was so, like when he leaves and then how Madeline, when she finds out, she's like that motherfucker. And that's when the Marauders come to kill her. And you don't know what the fuck is up with that. And then she goes, the X-Men save her. And then she goes off to the Outback. That's when they're in Australia, and they stay in the Outback, and then little by little, there's a lot of shit that goes on after that, but so good. Like, that shit, it can't, like, the shit they're doing now, you don't hold up to this.
And that's what gave me my love for Jubilee, so I don't want to hear people on Twitter say that Jubilee's no good, or a joke.
No, she was good. She played the next role, because Kitty had leveled up, and she... Once she learned to be a ninja, I mean, she...
I'm not saying that Jubilee has been portrayed, or it hasn't been treated very well recently, I at least in my opinion, but back in when she first originally was presented, I thought she was great.
Yeah, I thought she was cool. Like, you were used to that. It wasn't a new thing to see Wolverine mentor children. Like, that was just his... unreluctant role that he played.
Well, it was like on a sitcom when the baby on the sitcom, like when Rudy gets old enough that she's not cute anymore, they got to bring a new kid on the show.
Yeah. Yep.
It was the girl thing. So they had to bring in a new, Kitty Pryde wasn't the young kid anymore, so they needed to bring a new one in for Wolverine to mentor.
That's what happened. They had to get a new one, and that's the case. She came in and helped. She saved Wolverine's life. I mean, this was back in the good old days where you couldn't blow him up in a nuclear fire, and the dust of his cells would reproduce, and he would come back to life. What kind of bullshit
goes back
is that?
To what... That goes back to what we were saying earlier about like Superman and magical characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. They go in for like the cool factor, like Wolverine's so badass, like, he can come back together like you just said, but like it takes all the drama out of it, all the tension.
That's why I call such bullshit on the time displaced X-Men. Because Wolverine, that is, Old Man Logan is basically your excuse to you want to put him back in that classic role of his powers being, he is exactly at that point of where he was in terms of his healing factor, is at that point where he was when he was in the X-Men at that time, of the original X-Men, back when Claremont and Miller were doing it. Like, he could be killed. If you heard him enough... He can't get up. Like, he can't. If you heard him too many times, he needs days to heal. Like, there are times where there are things that happens to him where he has to, his whole deal, or to put him, take him off the page for a while to not overuse him, he would have to go into what they call a healing coma, like a healing trance.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have to sleep for days for his body to recover, because every time, he's like a battery, like a phone. If you keep recharging the battery so much, every time it runs out of power, it recovers slower. It takes longer and longer for it to charge as the battery just keeps being used. And that's kind of how Wolverine's power was kind of explained. So
kind of connects him into his the animal side of his nature too, with like bears hibernating and stuff like that.
Totally. So he would go off somewhere. Like they would have all, you know, things would happen and in missions and stuff, and he would, and you would hear it because he would be like, "You should have recovered." You know, one of the team would be like, "You should have recovered from that by now. You know, like you're doing too much and you have to, you need to rest." And he'd be like, "Stuff it. You know, this is, you know, I know what I'm doing." And then eventually, when Xavier was alive, he'd be like, "You know, you need to go. You need to go off and chill for a while and rest." And he would. He'd go off somewhere and not get into trouble for a minute and then come back later. Like, that was the good days. He can go leave. But they wrote the other characters strong enough that they could still, the books were still good without him having to be in it.
You know? Yeah, and didn't have to.
Right, like you bump up. You do good character development with all the characters so that when some of them are not there, like Cyclops would leave and then Storm would leave and she would come back and then Wolverine would go and then Beast would stop by for a couple of days. Like, they could do that in and out type of thing. But that's the thing. Like, I hate now with the old man Logan, it's like, okay, now we can have him where he can be hurt and he's not as you know, always so powerful where he heals from everything right away. The same thing with the kids. It's like, oh, we can instead of developing the old Wolverine, you could easily write that the Wolverine, the original Wolverine, just say his powers got weakened. Like, just say his body, mm-hmm. after a while, is just not as strong as it used to be. It's like it used to be back in the day, you know, when he was younger. His powers are like that now. You know, just have, you can have him just be in the, you know, the Beast. That's a quick conversation in the lab with Beast. Like, we've checked your body, and this is what we found. Your healing factor absolutely. Still works. It just is not as strong as it was.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be more careful when you're when you fight.
You know? Yeah, it could be just like wore it out.
Yeah, yeah, if he came back to life from you know, now that he's dead, they could explain, you know, okay, you're back, but it was such an ordeal that your healing factor is not what it used to be.
Right. So that when I see that skeleton, that means you're dead. Like whenever, like now, it's like, oh, it's normal. He'll be all right. Just let him sit in the side for a minute, and he'll be fine. But back in the day, when you see that skeleton and those claws, that's it. That's a future story that he ain't come back from that.
He's done. And that goes back to that issue that I was telling you about with Limbo.
Yeah.
They had like the skeleton and Sim, that purple demon, was picking his teeth with one of his claws.
That's it.
Oh yeah.
That's it.
I remember that.
That's good shit right there. Like and Cyclops the same way. Like, develop Cyclops. Like, to have him have to be a martyr and then have a new one come in, a new Cyclops, to go back and do the same angst that we've gotten already. It's like, I don't know, maybe, you know, develop the one you got. Steve Rogers used to get started. Ed Brubaker, you know, kind of gave Steve a life again, you know, kind of gave him motivations and kind of updated his life a little bit. You know, so he had good stories and whatnot, and I think it worked. If you get a writer to come in and do it, it can happen. You don't have to. It's like a shortcut. It's like, you know, instead of doing all the development shit, we'll just get the younger ones, get rid of the ones we have, or don't use them as much, and, you know, it'd be fine.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say about Cyclops. It was, I feel like when they did that, it was, you know, we've broken this toy so much that we're just going to throw it out.
Why fix it?
We can instead just of trying to fix it, let's just buy a new one.
And Daryl, I think that we both felt kind of the same way when we heard that they were going to do like a relaunch of the X-Men books and bring them back to, you know, priority. That this wasn't what I was expecting, because it really just seems like the exact same stuff that we've been getting. I really thought it was going to be something different.
Nope.
And I'm like you, I'm ready for that younger group to go back to where they came from.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, focus on the all of the mutants that are actually here in this time.
Make some new. You have young ones now. Like, Jason Aaron made a whole bunch. Use them. Like, develop them. If you want to get some new mutants, get some new ones. Like, I'm not against any of that. You can get some new ones and have them join the school, and you can develop them and kind of pull back on the older mutants a little bit and kind of you know, focus a little bit more on some of the younger ones, but have them develop like Kitty wasn't, you know, like how Kitty was and Storm was, and they weren't just thrown in without any type. They took time to develop them more. Mm-hmm. You know, like they wrote, you know, the stories were the things that did it. And I just don't feel it with these X-books now. Like, it's just, you're telling me this, but I don't feel it. Like, it's just no connection with these stories. It just doesn't matter to me anymore. Like, they're like hollow versions of the ones that I used to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't feel that connected to them.
I mean, I'm gonna buy the new teams. I want to see how it is, but I don't know. I don't have the hopes that I had before they announced what exactly it was. I'm gonna try it out, though.
It's funny because I do think that they, in other areas, are doing a pretty good job of introducing and getting new characters to catch on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's quite a few new characters that they've come up with, whether it's like Spider-Gwen or these different female characters that they have now. They've gotten
for sure.
They've gotten them out there and been able to have them like catch on and get a fan base and stuff like that. So I think it's just where their effort is lying. Like, they're pushing those characters. And even though, you know, there's the new initiative with putting some investment into the X-Books, it's still not on the same level where they're really pushing new characters within that corner of their universe to get them to catch on.
Well, you never mm-hmm. level up long-time characters. You never level up new characters by putting them in by killing old ones. You do it by having them be part of the story, and then eventually through the story they level up to that, taking that mantle through the story. Like, Jim Rhodes didn't just mm-hmm. come in the book and just automatically get the suit and he was, you know, Iron Man. Like, he had to mm-hmm. earn mm-hmm. that, like, through their friendship first and their mm-hmm. a relationship, you know, a brotherhood that was developed between them. And then slowly, Tony started drinking too much and partying too much, and he just was losing focus on who he was and the direction of his life. And then Jim was like, hey, man, you got to get it together. And eventually mm-hmm. it was like, I don't want this shit anymore. He just gave it up. He was like, you do it. I want to drink.
Yeah.
And you didn't feel angry about it. I don't think there was an angry backlash to Jim. If anything, he was an Avenger.
No, not at all. Yeah.
He wound up being an Avenger. He was the one in Secret Wars. Like, he had to hide that. Like, that was a slow thing where he had to hide that he had taken over that mantle. Because mm-hmm. he didn't think that they would accept it not being the scientist, you know, the genius Tony Stark. And I thought it was, and they were such good stories, and you still had Tony in the book. Like, they still, the stories were, Jim had some story and Tony had story, and they would break it up, both stories, and they would be throughout the book. And, it, mm-hmm. and so you didn't feel like you lost anybody. So the guys who were straight up Tony Stark fans, you still got Tony Stark, and the ones who were also excited about Jim, you got to see a new Iron Man. And I think when you do that, I think it kind of works. But when you just kill off one, like Riri, like, I don't know why you would have to, if she's not going to call herself Iron Man, why would you have to kill off
Iron Man?
Tony Stark to do, right, you could just have her be Ironheart while he's Iron Man, right? What is the big deal? And I don't know, he could even be a mentor to this child
mm-hmm.
at the same time, so that you're getting both. Like, there's Miles, and then there's Peter Parker out there. He's doing his thing. It's not stopping anybody from, if you just want to read Peter Parker, you got it. Just read Peter Parker. But then for those of us who like Miles Morales too, and I do, I could read that, and I could read Peter Parker. I like both, so I could read both.
Yep,
I don't feel like I'm losing something. Like Thor, the new Thor, that was told in a way that I don't feel like I lost the original Thor. You know, you
because they actually built the story up over time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that he did an excellent job with the story in that case. That, I mean, so much so that. And everyone has their own opinion, so this is just mm-hmm. mine. But
yeah.
I found it much more interesting
mm-hmm.
With Jane Foster as Thor. It just gave it a different perspective that it hasn't had in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I give you this. That
human alter ego again. Right, and right. It's just very, very interesting.
I give you this as well. The Thor book sales went up when now that we have the Jane Foster Thor than when we had the original Thor. Well, with the same writer.
Different element. Yeah.
With the same writer. And that says something. Like
it does.
It goes to your writing. Because I don't think that these X-Men are being accepted. The young ones. These books are not doing as well as they're saying that they're doing. When you look at the order numbers as the books progress. They're going down. They're not going up.
Yeah.
And none of them are like top 10 sales on these books. Which, I mean, for an X-Men book to not be that high still, like for X-Men books to be as low as like a Spider-Woman book, that says a lot of how far they're falling for some of these books. So they're not being accepted like that. Like Iron Man sales are not that great, and you have the most popular writer, popular writers at Marvel on it. It's not exactly doing gangbusters. It's doing okay.
Yeah,
it's doing strong sales for okay sales for a mainstream book. If this was an indie book, then they'd love these sales, but for a mainstream book, it's doing okay. But it's not something where people are just really jumping on this book and really digging these new characters. And I think they're going to be punished. I think these new characters are going to be punished because there is that feeling from us, you know, older readers who read the books weekly that you're just pushing the new ones on it, but you're just taking away all the older ones too that we liked. There's room for both. You don't have to take it away and not have, you know, you mentor them, you bring them in, you have them, you know, give them books, you have them be in the stories, have them be a supporting character for a while, and then move them into having their own book. That's what that's how they used to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have them support. They're in as support characters, and then they move to prominence in their own book.
Or they take over the book. Yeah. My favorite example of that is probably Wally West, because
totally.
It's such a long history.
Such a long
as history. Kid Flash. You know,
20 years or so, or
Kyle too.
More. Listen to From Kid to Flash if you'd like to hear about that.
Exactly. I did that for you, Chris.
Thanks for the segue.
Nice. Kyle as well, like he did the same thing. Dick Grayson, he moved from, Robin to Nightwing. He even took over the cow for a minute,
took like 40 years
for
him to grow up.
Yeah,
to that point, you know what I would like to see that. I think that for anyone that feels like with Cyborg. Feels like he's still more a Teen Titans character than a Justice League character. I would love to see them have published a story, or they could still do so, in explaining, showing how it was that he moved up in the ranks to be able to, to join the Justice League. Because did they? I don't know, Daryl. Maybe they did. Did they tell that story?
Before he got to the Justice League?
Yeah.
No, because he didn't get to the Justice League until DC 52, and then DC,
right,
DC
right, 52,
they took that away, that there was no, there were no Teen Titans with Dick Grayson, Starfire, Wonder Girl. Like, they kind of, and now
that's
that,
what I was.
Yeah, with Rebirth, they kind of said that history was taken away from them, like the JSA, we're stuck in kind of like a time thing.
Yeah,
and they didn't age, and they had to keep fighting this thing. Well, they were saying in the Rebirth thing story, they were saying that they did a miniseries before the Rebirth book relaunched.
Yeah,
read
that. Yeah,
where it basically had it where to not for this villain, right? They had to forget their history because if they remembered, this villain would be able to come back. So to not come back, they had to all agree to forget that they were the Teen Titans and they were friends and all that. And then when they remember, then they have to fight the villain. Like, that was their way of... They got it. Like, DC got the hint that people were not happy with you doing.
See, for me, it's very similar to... And Chris, I don't know if you'll feel the same way, but I know you do in terms of the Wally West thing, but I know a lot of people were, you didn't realize it until you read the DC Universe Rebirth one shot. But what it was, is so many people were upset about the disappearance of Wally West in New 52 because he never had a chance. Like, he just disappeared, right? Mm-hmm. He just never existed.
No.
There wasn't a story to let fans say goodbye to him.
Nope.
And similarly, there's no story, like, everyone, you know, anyone that's read the old, you know, the Teen Titans with Starfire and Cyborg and stuff, there's never been a story to say, okay, you know, this is where Cyborg started, and now he's moved up to the big leagues and stuff like that. It's just, bam, he's just right there. Yeah. And just like Wally West, okay, bam, he's just doesn't exist. And I think it would be great to have a story like that, but... And I know what you're saying, that they're basically in New 52, that version of the Titans never even existed.
I like Cyborg, but I if I had to choose, I would have left him as part of the Teen Titans, and I would have, like, took Black Lightning. I know he wanted, and I'm with that. I want a diverse team. I do want people of color to be included in the teams and stuff, but I would have either took Vixen, or I would have pulled up, I'd have leveled up Vixen, or I'd have leveled up someone who had been in the Avengers, I mean Avengers, I would have leveled up someone who had already been in a JLA team.
And then I would have loved writing, Black Lightning, now that you say his name. I wouldn't have thought of it.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought. I would have did that. I would have brought her and I would have brought him into it and have him be part of the team and then do stories with him as opposed to trying to, like, that was Geoff Johns' thing, that he wanted Cyclops to be a part of the Justice League, but it doesn't work as well, and people just either accept it or they don't. But I don't think he works,
like, I don't mind it at all.
I don't think he works as well because all his development really came from the Teen Titans, and they really,
everything that you know about him,
yeah,
is based on what you may have read.
It works so much better. Like, the only person I can see being part of the Justice League that would be okay is Wally. Like, that's the only one I could see when he joined the Justice League. It made sense. It worked because he earned it. You know, he went through all that time and earned that mantle. Eventually, Kyle too. He earned that mantle. There was no Green Lanterns. And he went through years of character growth before he was accepted as the Green Lantern. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so it's I miss those. I miss that more. Every time I reread because they're releasing the volumes of the new Teen Titans, and now I think it's up to volume 3, which I have.
And, yeah, I've been getting them. I've been getting them as well, Daryl. I just love reading those things.
I love it. That's where they work. Like that group, that core group is my sweet spot.
Yeah, me too.
When you do teams, I love teams, and I love when they build teams. Like I like those stories, man. They work. That's why I wish, you know, like, that's missing from, like, the Avengers and stuff. Like, when it doesn't work. It's just. I think that's missing. Even though they're trying to say they're friends,
but I think the Titans worked so well too because none of these characters had solo titles.
No,
so all of their development had to be right in that book itself.
Totally,
so you weren't missing anything. You know.
Yeah.
Well, even they let at that time. You know, they didn't really. There wasn't a lot around DC that really cared about Robin or doing anything with Dick Grayson, so Marv Wolfman was able to, you know, concentrate on that character, and he was able to make big decisions about Dick Grayson and his life and stuff, and they allowed him to do that. And then that was one of the problems for Marv Wolfman down the road, is, like, eventually they decided, DC decided, okay, well, we got plans for Nightwing now.
They got too successful.
We're taking him away from you again.
And to bring it all around, that's the same problem that the X-Men ended up having too. Chris Claremont had his own little toy box, And every time they wanted to start adding to it, he would just start writing that too, whether it was New Mutants or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And then finally it got so large, like, no, we're kind of taking some of this away from you.
Right.
And sometimes that can be a good thing, as we've seen
for sure.
Attempts that Claremont has made at other times to write the X-Men.
Well, if you remember, there was a battle. There was a battle between the Bat Office and the Teen Titans, because the Teen Titans was, to a point, becoming even more popular than the Bat books.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, if you read the books that were going on at the same time as Teen Titans, in Teen Titans, Bruce Wayne was a dick. He was written as just a dick to Dick Grayson all the time. Like, he would just be like, all right, stop playing with your little friends. Let's get to work. Put that shit down and let's get to work. It was Batman and Robin time. And in the Batman books, it was Bruce was trying to, he kind of agonized and he kind of started pushing Dick Grayson away. Like, he wanted him to, after he got hurt, he was like, I don't want you to be Robin anymore. And and Dick was written as like being angry that he took his mantle away and was going to give it to somebody else. He was like, you know, I am Robin. And he was like, I shouldn't even have a Robin for a while. And, you know, he trying to kind of push him away. But you got Bruce's side of it. And in the Teen Titans side, it was just, he's always jumping on you. And Starfire is like, I love you. And why do you let Bruce? It was almost like an abusive relationship. Why do you let Bruce do this to you all the time? This is wrong. Yeah. And he's always hurting you. It's almost like he's beating him the way they talk about him. It's like, you let him do this to you.
I just read the recently, because I read all those original issues of Outsiders. So I read the Outsiders and Titans crossover, and I think that you guys covered that on Gotham.
Yeah, we did. Recently,
So that's all fresh in my mind too. It's very, you know, agonistic.
Yeah.
Until the very end, when Batman kind of said, "All right, you're doing a good job," but like 3/4 of the crossover, you know, he's bossing everyone around. And
Was kind of the breakthrough.
Yeah, it was the breakthrough. Was, and even Corey, like, with their relationship in the beginning, Corey was like, she's like trying to touch him and be with him. And this is, we're talking about Corey. All right? Corey. And he's like pushing her away. And she's like, I don't know why he keeps doing it. Like, she's crying about it. Like, because he was being really cold. And Wonder Girl was like, you need to stop being an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, we're your friends, and you're really being an asshole. Stop trying. And they would constantly say, stop trying to be like the Bat. You don't have to be like the Bat. That's why we're friends, because you're not like him. And that was his, like, eventually he had to stop that, and then he kind of came into his own. But before that, he was a dick. I had forgotten, like, rereading it after a while, I had forgotten how conflicted he was, because he was really cold. Like, he was really trying to be Batman number two with the way that he was acting. He was like, I just do this. This is the mission. Do it. He's trying to be all tough and stuff. And you read it and you'll be like, oh, this is Dick Grayson. He's going to be all jumping around and, you know, happy-go-lucky, because that was him with quips and stuff. And nope, this is a very serious, detective-minded, you know, dude. He was pushing his friends away. They're ready to be like, you know what? We about to fire you and just leave if you're gonna keep acting like this. But
exactly, some good
stories, man. A lot of it, I guess, the industry too is harder now, because you don't get that time anymore. Like, you have to sell. You gotta sell it in six, and then if you sell it in six, you gotta. Make sure you're ready for 12 issues. And then after 12, it's like, all right, do we relaunch? Or, you know, what do we do? So you kind of don't get that chance to see your characters grow through the different stories. It's like,
it's a different business model now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can't believe that Amazing Spider-Man is near number 30. I don't know if I remember the last time a Marvel comic got up to issue 30, so I don't know what they're doing. I gotta believe that they're going to be relaunching with a number one sometime soon.
Well, at least with the current Spider-Man book, like, I think with what they've learned with Spider-Man is that we do a few issues and then we start a crossover. like a multi-part, not even a crossover, but a multi-part story. If we do that, people like it. Like, for the most part, they like the Dan Slott, and I think Dan Slott and Chris Yost, I think, or somebody. One of them does it. They kind of write together when they do multiple part stories.
But for
Spider-Man, it kind of works. Like, you know, you do that, and that's why they leave him alone. He's the only writer they don't take off the book. Like, they're...
I know. He's been doing Spider-Man now for 300 years.
Yeah, there's no one else they have that could take over that book, I think. They don't know who they would give that book to.
Seriously, it's insane. Everyone else goes all over the place.
He does Spider-Man. Like, that's it. But it, you know, it's a safe place. It works. Those numbers got to fall before they move him. And they're not, so he's not going anywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's still, I like it. It still works. I still.
Oh, yeah. No, I like it. I'm just a little surprised that.
I know.
They're still keeping the numbering for now because it's not a Marvel thing to do.
Yeah, I know. It is. It is true that they do keep those numbers the way they are. Well, now they do that little, they put that one on it, even though it's not a number one.
Huge number one
on it. To tell you this is the new start of a story.
Yeah.
So it's safe to pick up this issue.
I want to be there and watch somebody actually be fooled by that. Like, oh, this is a number one.
Like, what the fuck?
I'm waiting for them. Like, I don't know if this is, like, something that's not, like, something that they're actually legally able to do or something.
Right.
But to just put a number one on there, no other numbers, and then when you turn the page, like, in that, you know, the indices, to actually have the actual number in there only and not have, like, the number 18 or anywhere on the cover at all. There must be a reason why they haven't done that. And I don't know if it's just, like, for filing purposes or something, they legally can't do that or what. I don't know, but I'm surprised they haven't.
Maybe just the internet backlash from people.
Yeah, they would. I mean, you still have a collector mentality and they need to catalog their books.
I know. They don't want to have to open up the front page every time.
Yeah, so that could be a thing to keep them from doing that right now.
That's funny, though.
But it is funny when they do. I do wait to see when someone picks it up and go. Because I remember back in the day when I used to do, when I was print, I used to just pick it up and put it in the bag. Like, I didn't really read at the comic store. I would get it to go home and chill and read it.
Yeah.
So if I saw like they restarted, I probably would have picked it up, threw it in the bag too, and been like, what? It says 58 in this, or 25 or shit. Like, I'd probably be a little mad. I'd have been a little pissed if I had saw that. They do it all. You know, it's the tricky thing they do also with second books. Where, like, Doctor Strange, you think... They don't put the creator of the second Doctor Strange book on the cover. They put it inside, so you think, oh, this must be, like, a side story that Aaron is doing. You know, Jason Aaron is doing with his current Doctor Strange. And you pick that shit up, and you open it up, and I did it digitally, and I looked and I went, what the fuck is this? This is not even Jason Aaron writing this, and it has nothing to do with the current Doctor Strange book. I'm getting Doctor Strange not because of Doctor Strange. I'm getting it because I like Aaron's version of Doctor Strange.
Exactly.
And I was so mad. And I know there are other people that have complained about that too. Like, they thought it was like a side part to the current Doctor Strange book because they did something like that, and it wound up being something totally different.
We are getting so way off topic, but I want to just ask both of you guys if you encountered this when you were a little kid. Like, you know how they were printing back in the day, especially Marvel, reprinting their old issues, whether it was Marvel Tales or the I can't remember what the Fantastic Four one was called.
I forgot. They did it with X-Men too.
They did it with Uncanny. X-Men. They did it with Avengers for a little bit. So I thought that I was buying Spider-Man comic books. And it's like, and then all of a sudden, it wasn't until like I got just a little bit older that also I'm like, oh, this is not Spider-Man. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. The Green Goblin. I love the Green. And then it took me like literally like 2 years to realize these were old stories. Right. And the Green Goblin had been dead for like 10 years.
Oh, I have multiple Phoenix. I have multiple Phoenix Saga stories in single issues because I did the same shit.
Buying Spider-Man proper, but yeah. Like you were buying Marvel or whatever it was.
I did.
Did that happen to you guys? Or
yeah, I had multiple books I bought. Because I did it with X-Men, and I did it. I think I did it with Spider-Man. I did it. It was something else they did that with too.
Like I didn't realize that these were like.
It had a different cover. I didn't know. I just saw. A different
and it said
cover.
Marvel Tales, real small at the top. And huge letters, Spider-Man.
And I put it in the bag. I said, put it in the bag.
Uh-huh.
Give it to me. And I went home. And I opened it up. And I was like, wait a minute. What do you mean? Jean Grey's dead. What are you talking about? This can't be happening. What is this? Yeah. I have
my I don't know if I ran into that.
No?
I mean, I know I know that I had some issues with the classic X-Men, but that was clearly, you know... You could tell they didn't pull any shenanigans with that. So I knew, you know, the whole classic thing and stuff like that, I knew that it was a reprint. But I was probably a few years later, too.
Yeah, it got me.
In terms of what I was reading. Like,
you were sophisticated.
This is like 87, 88. Yeah,
you read Directions. So. You must have been a kid that read Directions, too, didn't you?
Exactly. That, maybe, yeah.
I was the one that threw it to the side. I need no damn Directions. Let me put this together myself. And then I'm missing a screw and stuff, and it don't work.
Like, I'm getting Fantastic Four. I'm getting Spider-Man. I'm getting it all.
Just give it to me. I just would throw the stuff in the bag and be happy I got it and go.
Right. And then the kid down the street that was 3 years older. Yeah, these are all reprint comic books. Like, huh?
Oops.
What do you mean?
What are you talking about? I don't know about no reprint. Let me go online and check this out. Oh, can't go online. There was no online.
There is no online.
So you just had to sit there and be like, oh, man. Bought this shit for nothing. And I did it more than once. So it wasn't like I didn't learn. I kept doing it.
No, me neither.
I kept doing
then after a while, I would just start collecting, like Marvel Tales and stuff like that.
That's how they got me, because I did. It was like a habit, like, fuck it.
That was fine.
Keep writing. Just keep buying it.
I liked it.
Yeah. Just keep buying it. Don't stop.
It was good.
Yeah, it was good.
But yeah, I guess, so if I'll go ahead and talk about a book that I read just recently.
Okay, go for it.
We're going to have a little book discussion on Omnibus Volume 1 of this with Martin and Nick on Nerdy Legion sometime soon.
Oh, man.
But I reread Starman number 0.
Oh.
Okay. From, I think it was like 94, 95, right around there.
Damn, it's been so long since I read that.
And written by James Robinson and art by Tony Harris. And this, probably for me, is one of my favorite close-ended comic books, superhero stories, I think. Absolutely loved it. James Robinson just does such a great job. Have you read this, Chris, in the past?
I have read that issue and then a few more.
Oh,
and then
love this.
I decided to wait until I collected the back issue, so I actually have the whole run now, but I gotta go back and actually dig into it, and just because I want to just read the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, what he did was, James Robinson just did such a great job, making Opal City like a character in itself, and you know that's really how he even starts the book. It is just going, you know, the history about the city and so on and so forth, and how basically that it's there's always been one champion of Opal City, and that's always been Starman, and on his own has been able to keep this city safe. And I just, it's just such a great beginning to this 80 plus issue epic. And the fact that, like, it goes then into David Knight and how he's taken over for his dad. And, you know, by the third page, he's shot in the chest and is dead. It's just something that I'd never really read something like that before. And James Robinson just does such a great job going through. And then after that, it kind of, you know, goes to, you know, maybe days or weeks before, where it's got Ted Knight and Jack and David all talking and stuff, and you can really, the character development is there from right away, and see the, and you know, the how Jack just does not get along with his brother. He does not get along with his dad. No. And you can tell that they love each other, but they just do not get along.
No.
And it's just such a well done issue. I love how you get a feel for Jack's character immediately, like how his love for like old like knickknacks and you know he's a collector and he's got
the hipster stuff. They have now. He was the hipster then. They do now with like the eclectic stuff, like not being into. He's not into computers. He's not into technology. He's he likes old music. He likes
all that stuff.
Right, it's just got all his the thing.
Retro stuff.
All the retro stuff, yeah.
And it was just, and that was, like, you know, years ago. Now we're talking 20 years ago.
Yep.
Can't believe it's been that long. But, you know, before you really heard hipster, he's definitely what would have been a hipster. But, you know, I mean, obviously it goes through. And
yeah, he was a beatnik, I think.
That's
before they were hipsters.
Yeah. But I was saying.
That's how you know we're old.
If you haven't figured that out by now,
we just keep we just reconfirming every time we talk.
And it's just you know, I mean, like I said, David Knight dies right away, and Ted gets his observatory blown up and gets knocked out and sent to the hospital, and Jack is next, where a guy comes into his shop and starts shooting away at him, and he manages to escape by the skin of his teeth. But he grabs one of his dad's old cosmic rods that he had in storage in his shop, and manages to get away that way. And you know, it turns out that these two people attacking, a man and a woman, are both the children of the original Starman, Ted Knight's old nemesis, the Mist. He wants to break down and destroy Ted Knight. He doesn't want to kill Ted at this point. He wants to kill his children. He wants to destroy his life's work. On and on. And I mean, it basically ends with Jack getting away and saying, "I got to get to my father." He's like, he's going to know what to do. You know, after all, now that Davey's dead, my dad's Starman. It's like, I'm not.
It's such a pushback. Like, Kyle was too. Like, it's such a pushback of the era of the Hal Jordan with the jackets, you know, the aviator jacket, jumping in and being like the Clint Eastwood tough guy, like the old style tough guy. Like, this was like such a pushback against that. Now this was like Barry Allen as well. Like when we went to Wally, how did he beat his heroes? He would befriend his villains and get them jobs and get them out of crime. Like that was such an opposite way to handle it. Like it was such a pushback against the 80s, I think. You know, the Republic. Those were politics, too, because the Republican was in the White House at the time, and there was the theme of let's be tough on crime, let's be, like that toughy type of thing. And then there started to change where instead of, like, the Sylvester Stallone and the Clint Eastwoods, you started to get more of, like, the Tom Cruise guy, hero. Like, he's not the big gigantic dude. Like, that was different with Starman. Yeah, his brother was that guy. His brother was that guy, that tough dude. But he wasn't. He didn't want to do that stuff. He wanted to just run his little, get his little antique business going and,
Absolutely. And I love the fact, and now, obviously, now this is just the first issue, so not, none of this is developed already, but the first issue was more than enough to draw me into the story because it was told in that manner. And it was I really like the fact that one, he really, really meant it when he said he didn't want to be your hero. And yet he became very good at the job. But by the end, he also stuck to his guns and like, okay, I've taken care of what I need to take care of.
Yep.
And now I'm not going to continue to do this
anymore. I'm out.
And he passed his staff to Courtney. To Stargirl and,
yeah,
and went off to the sunset with his kid, and that was the end of the story. And I absolutely love that you can read from 0 to 80,
mm-hmm.
and it's a complete story.
Yeah, the end of the journey. Yeah,
it was just so beautifully told, and mm-hmm. that's the first thing that I ever read by James Robinson, and it's certainly still my favorite.
Yeah, James Robinson, he's an interesting cat. Like, he's gone through a lot of... I've talked to him, too. Like, I've met him, and he's cool. But he has been through some interesting journeys, man. Like, he kind of lays it all out there.
And if you've read Airboy...
Which I have.
Yeah, he tackles a lot of that head on.
Very much so. He lays it out there, and he's gone through some things, man. He is like Jack. He's made mistakes. Like, he hasn't hidden that he's made these mistakes.
And honestly, reading some of this, because they even include some of the first couple letters pages in here, because there was no letters in from fans. It was him just writing about what he was doing here. And you can tell that he hadn't gotten to, like, his low point in terms of, his personal low points.
Right.
At this point, and you can almost tell that's the direction that he was headed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and to read that from back then to now, it's like, oh, you can kind of see that happening. And knowing, what happens, in the future personally for him. It was very interesting to read this now 20 years later. I'll put it that way.
But he's like he's like Roy Thomas. He does a real good job of pulling in history, with Starman. He did a real good job of he's creating something new. And I think you're right. Like, it was a response to that time period of the 90s. So in that fact, because I get the impression it was one of the reasons it's a favorite for a lot of people is there's a lot of comic fans at the time that were really like starving for a book like this, it seems like, at that time. But he does a really good job of tying it into DC's history, but at the same time making something new with the legacy of the Starman.
Go ahead, Darryl.
Well, I was just going to say, some of those stories, if you read some of the old stories, they are, like, a lot of them are written such the same. Like, the character, their personalities are written so close together that they had to, like, the new characters came after them, they kind of went against that. Like, you read some of those old Justice League ones, and Barry was a lot, like, wasn't that different from Batman in some cases, and Green Arrow wasn't that different from Flash, and, like, they didn't, they needed to kind of, it was almost like, let's take this guy, let's have them come together really quick, have a quick discussion about something, and then let's have them run off and stop this bad guy. But they didn't really think about the character development part of it for a lot of these stories, because they were throwaway. A lot of these stories were written back then and put in a closet to hold.
Right.
To keep the stories going. And then you'd have real run, like when they were hired and they were going to be able to get runs, long runs, then it'd be something. But a lot of those really older books were kind of like, just put this superhero in it and have him just go out and beat this guy. And it was more about the villain, like, more than it was the story of, oh, he finds this coin. The coin has magic powers. What does he do with that? He commits crimes with the magical coin. And then the hero comes in and stops the guy with the magical coin, and that's his story. And it's more about the guy with the coin than it is about the superhero itself. So,
and then the next issue, somebody finds, a magical wallet or something.
Yeah,
they rinse and repeat.
Yeah,
but that was the style. That was the style of the time. That was the style.
It got things, like, done. It was the 9 to 5. You had to keep the train. You had to keep train moving. You couldn't. couldn't pause. You know, you had to have stories that were generic because they would didn't know when they'd have to throw it in. It didn't have to. There was no continuity thing. They didn't have a. You know, sometimes they had times where they didn't have people. They didn't have stuff ready, and they had to have a. They wanted a backlog of stuff that they could just throw in at any time, and they didn't want to worry. So that meant you can't do. That's why TV was like that too. Like everything was a one and done episode. There's no. Thing of you foreshadowing something that's going to happen to these characters next episode or at two or three episodes down the line. It was write me and do an episode where we can throw it in. If it comes out in a different order, we don't care. Have it end with the characters the same way it began with. Put them in the exact same situation when it's over.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And going back to what you had said before about bringing in like old history, I think that was my first appreciation of it is what James Robinson did with bringing in all of the history that's both, you know, Ted Knight as Starman, plus all the other people that were Starman mm-hmm. and the Shade, and bringing it all together as a coherent continuity. That's, my first experience with it. And then, you know, later Geoff Johns did a lot of great things with it, too, with JSA. Mm-hmm. But, with what James Robinson did here with Starman was just incredible. He didn't throw anything away, and he made it all make sense. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very
pleasant. Yeah, definitely.
They left him alone pretty much. I mean, that kind of helped too. And
the fact that they were able to, you know, I mean, it was never a huge, you know, I don't think it was a top seller.
No.
But it did well enough to tell the story. And the nice thing about that is that when he was done with the story, they were able to say, okay, that's the end of the story. You actually got an ending to it.
Well, you hear that now more days. Like Tom is always, like we talk about stuff like Tom King. He's like, I would prefer, sometimes like, I don't even want to write Batman. It's too hard. I just want to give me Stapler Man. And let me get 6 issues of Stapler Man to write. Because they will leave me alone. I won't have to.
Give him the vision.
Yeah, that was that's exactly what it was. They gave him the vision. Said, left him the fuck alone. For the most part, I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, give me that. Give me somebody where you consider him a throwaway character, and you will let me do a story that's personal. You know, let me really take that character and build something with that character, and I won't have to. You know, and then I won't get 50 people telling me that's not what Stapler Man does, and then 50 other people saying Stapler does, and then you change it and you do this, and then Stapler doesn't do that. Stapler Man does the other thing, and then it's like you can't win because everybody's saying different, like what that person, you know, what that character would do.
Well, I haven't heard anyone say that about Batman.
I won't even touch that one.
I've heard a couple people say
get me beat up. I won't touch that one.
When is Martin. There not somebody saying that about Batman?
I know.
A character that huge is always somebody saying that somewhere.
Well, you heard me, Rob. I fixed Martin, so he's all right.
Yeah.
He knows the error of his ways.
It's about time.
I had to fix him. Mm-hmm. I had to fix him. But you're right, though. Those sides. There are a lot of old books that have those C-list characters. And when I say, and I know Mike would be wanting to kill me when I say C-list.
That doesn't mean they're bad.
It's not saying I'm not saying I'm bad. I mean in terms of popularity. Oh, when I say C-list and D-list and all of that, nobody knows them. It's just the characters mm-hmm. that nobody really knows. Like, I'd read a fucking D-Man comic. And I have. I have because he was developed, I think, well in Captain America, and I dug it. Uh-huh. So I'd read it. Nobody else would read it, but five of us. But but if you gave somebody the chance to do that, they would be able to do things with D-Man that, you know, you probably couldn't even do with Steve Rogers.
Sometimes with those characters, you're able to create more of an original story. Mm-hmm. Then you're able to when you have characters that you know, that you know you're the 300th person to have written this character, and there's going to be 300 more after you.
Yep.
You know, you can only do so much with those characters.
That's true.
But when it, you have a Starman or you know, like some of these C and D list characters, you can do so much with them because it doesn't make a difference to, you know, the company that owns them doesn't care.
No, no.
And then if you do a really good job and your book sells really well, you're rewarded by making that a character that no one can ever do that again with, because now they're popular enough that the company gives a shit.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Now they're like, uh-oh, leave it alone. Leave it alone.
Very well said.
Like the when Bendis wrote Alias, no one gave a shit about Jessica Jones.
Nobody.
Now she's got her own TV show. And
You know what Jessica Jones was? Oh, you know that character that had anal sex with Luke Cage? That's, I'm serious. Like on message boards and stuff, that's how they would say it. Like, you know that character that was I like dark stuff, and it looked like a dark kind of story. So I got on it because of that. But you know, other people, as it like spread a little bit about maybe it's worth picking up. Back in the old days of the message boards, there would be things like, Luke Cage or anal sex with Luke Cage.
That's news to me. I never read Alias.
You're not alone.
It's really good.
I'm sure it was great. It was just at a time where I was really down on Marvel in general. Mm-hmm. I was pretty much getting DC and maybe
early Marvel
five, six Marvel titles, and that just wasn't one.
Well, that was early Marvel Knights. I mean, there were quite a few books that just, you know, people just had no idea. When I mention it now, it's like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. You're talking nonsense to me right now. What do you mean? They only know certain things from Marvel Knights, like either the really good stuff, the critically acclaimed stuff, like they know Quesada's Daredevil stuff, or they know the stuff that was panned, like Angel Punisher. Like, those are the two things they know. It's like those things. Other than that, it's like, I don't remember that. I don't remember this. I don't, you know, and I don't remember Chuck Dixon Punisher or, you know, all the, when they had the, they weren't called Defenders, but they were called Marvel Knights. What you have now with this, with the Defenders, with the TV show, that was Marvel Knights.
Yeah.
And they got together to take down the Punisher. But now they're doing it again. Like, it's basically doing it again.
Yuppers.
But nobody read it but us, a few of us. So.
The timing was good for me with that initiative, because that was when I was getting back into comics. So I was trying a little bit of everything and then figuring out, you know, what I actually liked. So I remember some of those Marvel Knights books, like, on the shelf and stuff. And I think that's how I ended up trying Alias. Like, I didn't know what was good. I didn't know what my tastes were anymore, because I had been out of comics for several years. So I was also checking out, you know, what books have buzz, you know, what ones are getting a good review. Didn't matter. Was it Marvel, DC, Image, whatever? It didn't really matter.
Right.
I didn't have a habit at that point, so I just checked out books that were getting good reviews, and you know, like at that time Alias was one of them, and Wally West Flash with Jeff Johns was one of them, like Authority and stuff like that were popular at the time, so I tried a lot of that stuff just because it was getting a good review. But you know, I actually I gave myself a segue without even really intending to. Excuse me. I take a little sip of water.
You just want some suspense. You're just trying to build up suspense for the
draw it out. But without meaning to, I gave myself a segue into the one book that I read, which was Back to Marvel. I have talked about on the show before where I every once in a while I'll get back in the mood to continue on with the reading the early Marvel, sort of in order, not everything, but a lot of the main heroes and stuff. And so it just so happened that I was, the next book to come up in the queue was Daredevil number 4. So obviously the original first volume, Daredevil from the 60s, and this happened to be the introduction of the Purple Man.
Yeah, really.
which I had never read before. But yeah, he goes that far back. It's by Stan Lee, of course. Mm-hmm. The art was by Joe Orlando and Vince Coletta. One of the things that, you know, early Daredevil's not always praised, but one of the things I was impressed with by this issue is that there's a lot of Kilgrave of the Purple Man that Stan Lee is responsible for coming up with. He's not exactly what they turned him into later, but he was more intact than I expected him to be. You know, he's got sort of this creepy vibe about him. He starts off by just going into a bank and asking the teller for the money. And at this point, his powers are such that it's kind of proximity based. So once he gets far enough away, they realize like, hey, I just gave that guy a bunch of money and let him walk out.
They kept that too. They kept that in. It's still that way.
The proximity based. Yeah, I guess. Right. Yeah. He still has this sort of I'm better than everyone kind of attitude about him, and this sort of touchiness where when the he allows himself to be arrested, but his main problem when the police come to arrest him is that he says, don't touch me, I don't like being touched. You know, he's that came through in the portrayal, I think, in the TV show of kind of like he's real under control on the surface, but then it becomes clear that he's got some serious issues underneath the surface. And I thought it was also interesting that they, given the time period, it's more subdued, but they do have a female, like his interaction with the female as part of the, as one of the things that's in there, because Karen goes with Matt when Murdoch and the law associates they get the call to defend Kilgrave for the bank robbery, and Karen wants to go with them. You know, she says it's because she wants to see the courthouse and stuff, but it, you know, they have the whole thing where she's got a thing for Matt already. And so it's really because she just wants to spend time with them. Well, that ends up putting her in danger. And Kilgrave, you know, sure enough, he just tells her, hey, I needed an assistant, come along with me. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, and so it doesn't, obviously because of the time period, it doesn't get sexual or anything. The whole time he's just wants an assistant, you know, wants a secretary.
Yeah, they couldn't play that.
They couldn't really play it, go that direction with it. But I thought it was interesting that they did have the whole thing. But they do make a point to say that he wants her because she's attractive.
You notice all of them. I mean, every crook from DC and Marvel always had to be surrounded by a sexy assistant. You know,
Penguin,
Joker, all of them. Like that was the thing. They, no matter the villain, he had to have like one sexy assistant to be there. And they
always had the hero too, like had the love interest that was secretly pining for them, you know. So it's like reading it as a young boy, like you can get into that fantasy of having the woman that wants to be with you, like whether it's Spider-Man or it creates an interesting dynamic. You know, it kind of reminds me of not just the Jessica Jones TV show, but also the Daredevil first season, because Daredevil's still figuring things out. Like, it's kind of funny, he's got this red hood that's a part of his costume, and the only part of the point of the hood is to keep his business suit in the hood. And in this issue, he realizes that that's a bad idea, because he ends up, Kilgrave makes a bunch of bystanders attack him rather than fight, you know, Daredevil one-on-one. And he ends up trying to escape up into a tree because he doesn't want to fight the innocent people, and they get a hold of his hood. He's like, you know, this hood is a bad idea. I got to come up with something different to keep my costume. So he's still kind of learning and figure things out and stuff. But But yeah, Kilgrave does a lot of things in this issue that they would draw upon. He ends up setting himself in the top floor of this hotel. He makes the hotel staff kick out all the tenants, and he gets himself like his own little army because he goes to the gym and just tells all the guys working out there that they work for him now. But you know, there's some things because of the time period that are a little cheesy. But for the most part, I was pretty surprised by how much was intact. You know, the Purple Man threatens Daredevil by having Karen Page stand at the ledge of the skyscraper of the top of the hotel that they're at, and he's like, you know, I'll tell her to jump, and she'll. So things like that that were really really work and were really effective, and enough so that they could. You know, decades and decades later, could still be used. You know, so there's a few things like there's not really like they don't really bother to explain, or it's just Matt can deal with Kilgrave's powers because of his Daredevil powers, basically. Like, there's no other, you know, he just Kilgrave doesn't have an effect on him, mm-hmm. but it kind of works because that's part of the reason that Kilgrave is so. Incensed by Daredevil and wants to destroy Daredevil because he's like, I can't have a dude that can resist my powers, you know. I can't have him existing. But I was also kind of impressed, like the art, Joe Orlando, Vince Coletta, I don't know who the colorist was on this issue because I don't credit him, but or her, but there were some stylistic things that you just don't, like, I haven't really seen so far in reading Marvel Comics from this era where, like, there's a, after about halfway through the issue, Happy, or is, am I getting mixed up? What's his,
Foggy?
Foggy. Yeah, thinking
you're right, because they're written similar, right? The sidekicks right. are pretty similar. Yeah. They're best friends, yeah. You're not wrong.
Yeah, but yeah. So Foggy and him get in an argument because Foggy, you know, doesn't know he's Daredevil at this point, and he just is like, "You took Karen with her, and now she's with this dude." Like, he doesn't think, you know, he basically thinks like, you know, Matt couldn't protect her because he's blind, and right. they have a fight, and it's really cool because the panel they have Matt standing in the office, and. You know, feeling the emotional impact of that, and the colorist actually colors the whole scene around him in shades of purple. Mm. So I thought that was pretty stylish for the time, given, you know, the Purple Man and all that. And then later on, there's a couple of times where there's a scene where Daredevil's in costume. He's going to confront Purple Man at the hotel, and the panel is of the cityscape, and Daredevil's thought bubble is coming from off panel, so you know he's approaching that area, and they draw his shadow, so his shadow casts across the rooftop and then onto the skyscraper, so there's this big Daredevil shadow on the skyscrapers that he's headed to, you know, take care of business. So I just haven't seen that kind of like stylistic touch to the art in 60s Marvel stuff to this point, so those things kind of stood out to me. So yeah, it was a pretty solid issue, and now next issue is like up against the Matador, you know, so it's like it was hit and miss at the time, like some stuff and some stuff didn't, but the Purple Man doesn't appear again until like Daredevil 80 something in the 70s. You know, so even though it was a character that wasn't used a lot, and maybe like the potential of what he could actually do with those powers and how scary of a villain he could be, you know, it took like later on and Bendis really picked up that character and ran with it. But mm-hmm. But I wasn't expecting so much of that potential to be noticeable in this particular issue. So.
Yeah, it's even, I'm looking at the art now, and it's like, Even Purple Man, the way that his suit, it looked like his whole, it looked like he had regular clothes and then he would just paint it over and die. He would just dye purple entirely, everything, his clothes and everything. Like he's different from everything else in the other panels. It looks like he was almost put in after the fact.
Mm.
Because he didn't fit with anybody else.
Clipped and...
Yeah.
Yeah, that reminds me too of one other thing that I think makes sense that they dropped is that, you know, they have to have, they can't leave you hanging as far as, like, how did this guy come to be? You know, so he's got a gun on Daredevil and he's going to shoot him, and Daredevil says, well, at least tell me how you got these powers. He's like, yeah, you're right, I should tell you as your last, you know. In other words, like, yeah, we got to fit in this in for the reader.
Yeah.
And he just goes into this short story about how he was a spy for another country, and he was on this mission, and this vat of purple stuff, this experiment basically that they're working on in this top secret lab, exploded on him. So it's kind of just like this, it was like a typical origin, you know?
Right.
So that's one of the kind of things that doesn't necessarily work, that it made sense that they would drop that. But for the most part, I was really impressed with the issue.
That's cool. Rob, you got another one you want to mention?
Yeah, I'll go through one. It is Flash, Volume 2, number 181.
Mm-hmm.
That's Jeff Johns' run, because I've been rereading those. I've been getting the collections of that as well.
Mm.
This one is another one by Jeff Johns and Scott Collins. Mm. And it features Fallout, who was the villain that first appeared in the Iron Heights one-shot. He was the one that he was all hooked up to the actual power supply of Iron Heights. He was powering Iron Heights himself because he's a radioactive person. Mm-hmm. And he was in like really bad pain and stuff because they just had him basically just sucking like energy right out of him to power the plant. And in a previous issue, they had taken him out of Iron Heights because Flash had saw this, and he was alerting the authorities. So when he brought the authorities back, Fallout was nowhere to be found. So now at this point, they're bringing him back in an special armored truck, and of course the truck overturns and he gets out. So he's just basically walking slowly and just saying home, and he's just you know, inadvertently killing everything in his path in terms of vegetation and animals and stuff like that. It also happens to be Christmas Eve, and Wally's hanging out at the police station at this point. That's when detectives Murillo and Chire were partners in always helping Flash out with metahumans. Mm-hmm. If you guys remember back in during that time frame.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, it goes into Fallout's backstory, where he had been working on the construction of a nuclear reactor, and him and several other people had been trying to finish the construction, and there was an explosion, and all of his coworkers were killed except for him, and he became Fallout. To make things worse, he had brought his wife and son to work that day.
Ooh.
To show them around.
Yeah.
And not knowing what exactly had happened to them, he went and sought them out for help, thereby giving them radiation sickness, and they ended up dying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, John's made such
jogging, a villain. Jogging my memory.
Yeah, John's made the villain so tragic. And that's what was so different. Like, Wally was almost a social worker.
He was, yeah. You're absolutely right.
That's a good point.
He did such a great job with it. As a matter of fact, the next issue after this one is one where Flash doesn't even appear. It's just a Captain Cold issue. Do you remember how he
intermittently had villain issues.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, in his run, where he would just highlight a villain and go through their origin, go through what's going on at the time with them and stuff. So that's what the following issue was. It was just all Captain Cold. And not to get off this issue, but that Captain Cold one I had just read also. And the last issue of the most current Flash that I've read was that Rogues Reloaded number one, or part one, rather.
Yeah.
And it gets into, and it actually references, I was wondering what they were going to keep and what they weren't, but it does reference a lot of the stuff that Geoff Johns came up with in this origin story.
Oh, that's cool. You could tell he had a hand in some of those Rebirth books.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually getting ready for them to, you know, basically take out a lot of what he talked about, but they didn't. They abused a father, hung out with the grandfather, doing ice deliveries and stuff. It was all there. So that was kind of cool.
I was going to say that I think that, what is it, Joshua Williamson, son. Yeah. He seems like he respects or likes a lot of that history, too.
Yeah, that was my favorite issue so far of this new Flash. It's just
an impression, but
No, he's into he's into that. I know him a little bit. He's into he's into the older stuff too. So he was excited about getting.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I mean, I've been up and down on this current run. Some things have catched me a little bit more than others, but I really liked that last talk.
Yeah, building up the Rogues is a good start of getting the book on a more consistent track, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't blame them for not wanting to come out, jump, you know, right out and have them from issue one.
Right.
That wasn't a bad idea at all, to let everything else breathe. But, I mean, things have just been a little, just for me personally, a little up and down in terms of the storylines. But not so with this issue. This issue was great. Iris comes back in this issue. She ends up adopting that little kid who a police officer had recently passed away, and the father is actually the Weather Wizard.
Mm-hmm.
They made it. You think for a while it might be Wally, but it turned out it was the Weather Wizard was the father. So, Fallout continues to keep walking, passes by the Garrick's house, and Joan Garrick actually collapses for a second because of the radiation. It's like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? But he keeps walking. So she gets back up. I think that plays out later on, but I don't remember, and I haven't read much further.
Yeah.
But Wally encounters, Fallout because he's obviously making quite a mess of everything, and tries to capture him, and he breaks out. He keeps walking and walks to the cemetery and actually, you know, kneels down in front of his family's gravestones and is just saying, you know, I'm sorry and Merry Christmas. And Wally throws a control rod into him, and he's like, listen, he's like, I know that all of this isn't your fault. I also know that you've been mistreated at Iron Heights. He's like, I'm going to make sure that you're now taken care of.
Yeah. Who says and, that? Look at that. Who says that? You take out of
Wally says that to Fallout.
No, what I'm saying, like, who think about that? Like, Batman would never say that shit like that.
I thought you were literally asking.
No, I mean, just as a rhetorical question. Like, who the hell says that when you take out a bad guy? Like, that's not a superhero line to say, like, unless you're, like, Superman or something. But, you know, like, that makes him, that let you know that it's Wally and not, like, Gary or...
And don't forget, I mean, he knew that he had been mistreated too.
Right.
So he ends up getting what was her name? Tina McGee? Was that her name?
Was it?
She was the scientist. I know her name's Tina. I can't remember the last.
It might have been McGee because that was the cartoon one.
Yeah, I think
the cartoon one. That's the TV one.
The TV show. He gets her to come and they basically set up. Mm-hmm. Like an actual, like a holding cell, but it is a nice looking holding cell with, you know, a bed and, you know, everything else at this place where Iron Heights is actually going to still be able to retain power through Fallout, but not in a way that it harms him at all.
Right.
And he has, you know, he has a decent cell as
And Wally came a long way, because Wally was almost, he was like a Republican conservative.
Yes, he was.
When he was on the Teen Titans, he was the, like, you know, like a lot of the kids were doing their own thing, and he was the opposite. The he was the conservative one, where he kind of balked at a lot of their beliefs at times, like, because he grew up in a you know, he had the family unit, like he had the mom and dad unit kind of, and he was going to college, and you know, so he, this superhero thing was not, he was not digging a lot of that, like he wanted to leave. He was not happy with a lot of what they were doing and being vigilantes and stuff. It was great writing, because he like all of us, you go through a journey. The things you believed when you were 20 is not the, certainly the things, everything you believe when you're 30 or, God forbid, 40, like I am. But
we wouldn't know anything about that, though.
Yeah,
much younger, 40s.
Yeah, so it's like he went through, like most of us, he went to college and he changed. He grew up. You know, like everything wasn't so black and white. This Wally that was in the 20-year-old Wally in college would have been like, F that guy. He's a bad guy. He goes to jail. I don't like, there's no rehabilitation. You go in. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and then to go from that to this Wally is like, not only would he would take down the bad guys, but not only would he do that, he would go and check on them later. He would go and see if they saw their parole officer. He would get them jobs. He would, like, it would be a case where they'd be like, he would come in the room. Like, they kept it in the cartoon as well. Like, there was a scene in a cartoon, in Justice League Unlimited cartoon, where you knew it was Wally by the way he acted. But he came in a room, and once the villains were there, and he was about to act up, and he saw Flash, and he just put his head down and was like, never mind. And walked away. But that's the way that, like, Batman thing, they'd be scared. Flash's rogues would be like, I know I was supposed to do that job. I know I was supposed to go in for that interview, and I didn't go, and I'm at the bar now, and I'm acting stupid, and I'm sorry. Like, that would be his response.
Mm-hmm.
Johns gave him a great supporting cast. I mean, this was the time frame where Pied Piper was reformed.
Right, totally reformed.
And, you know, a supporting character. And, and, you know, and that's just, you know, one of many. But, that's to your point, is that, you know, you had some rogues that, you know, him and Barry had faced that now were actually good guys.
Yeah, like, I hate that life. I can't do that anymore. I'm out, you know.
Yeah, it's funny because Wolfman and John sort of took the Midwestern origins and sort of emphasize different parts of it and did different things with it. Like, when I think when Wolfman was writing Titans, he needed, you know, he brought about that aspect of Wally's background as a way of making him a contrast to the other parts of the team.
Way too.
And with John's, he more of went with, like, the more of, like, the blue collar. It was more of, like, northern, like, Chicago, Detroit, more like more of, like, a liberal Midwest kind of aspect to working class. You know,
that's one of the things. Keystone was really, you know, made to be, like you said, a very blue collar, you know, workers town.
I work on my car on the weekends.
Very much like Detroit, like Motor City kind of. And that's what the rogues, like, that's emphasizing them too, when you're talking about them, like, being, like, at the bar later, realizing that they made a mistake, or just the way that the rogues have their rules that Captain Cold
9-to-5ers. They were 9-to-5er criminals. Yes. We don't want to take over the world. We just want to rob some shit and, you know, like...
Exactly.
And if you get out of line,
it's our job.
You gotta go. You lose your job. If you get out of line, exactly. Like, you're a criminal, but you're, it's a job. Like, we got a contract. If you kill, you gotta go, because I don't want Flash on me. Like, that's agreement. Yeah. Go ahead.
The other main thing that happens at the very end of this issue is there's a new group of rogues that had first appeared right at the very end of the Iron Heights one shot as well. And this is led by a woman named Blacksmith, where this was her first that was her first appearance. So we at this point we still know nothing about her other than she's controlling these rogues, which consist of Weather Wizard, Girder, Magenta, Murmur, this second Mirror Master, and Plunder, who came from this alternate mirror world. And Shire and Murillo are having drinks and. On Christmas Eve, and Murillo walks out, and you see this red dot suddenly show up on his head, and Plunder shoots him right in the head and kills him. And he takes off his mask, and he looks just like Murillo. So that's the end of that issue. So you don't know where this is going to lead. But that's exactly right, is that the regular rogues, they have a lot of rules about what they do, what they don't do. And now this new group is kind of a different story.
Yeah.
And it's just getting started here, and I honestly don't remember a lot of what happens next, so I'm interested to read more. But
that's what turned me off a little bit when they first introduced Captain Cold and Flash, the TV show, the new one, because I was like, he was killing people. I was like, whoa, that's not Captain Cold. Like, his business is, I don't need to kill because I don't want that kind of heat. Like, I, you know, like, I'm just in it to get this money, and... That's it. I get my money and then I'm out. Like, I don't, you know, if you catch me, you catch me. And I go to jail, but I'm going to get out because that's what I do.
Yeah.
And you know that and I know that. Like, that's pretty much the deal. You don't break the rules, meaning you don't kill. And I won't have to dedicate my entire, because I will dedicate my entire few days to catching you. You don't want that type of heat, right? So, guess what? You follow the rules. But you do something in my city, I'll take you down. There was that kind of respect. Like, I'll take you down.
Exactly.
But you kill, I will follow you to the ends of the earth. And you know I could do it because of my abilities. So you don't want that. So let's chill. And they were cool with that, and to the point where even if someone broke those rules, Captain Cold would shut them down. He killed people because they did that. Like, he took them out. Because he was like, I don't want that heat. What you did, you totally broke the code. And because of that, you got to go. And he'd shoot them. He'd freeze them. They'd be done. Just to get them out of there. Because that was the deal. He was a man of honor about that. Like, that's what we do.
I love those villains.
Yeah.
Between Flash, Batman, Spider-Man, they're villains.
Because they're different. Like, they don't all have to be the same. They're different villains. Like, you don't. I liked Flash's villains were not Batman's villains, and Batman's villains are you know, Superman's villains or Spider-Man's.
But they're so good.
Yeah. They're good. They're really good villains.
They fit the nature of the hero.
Yeah.
They totally did. They are against, you know. They
totally did. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw out one more, and this is a weird one. This is Aquaman, who has had the darkest history. He's had the darkest history, I think, of all the heroes at that time, because he's the first person to have his child murdered.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I can think of any other hero even now.
I don't.
That had their child outright murdered, especially a baby.
Yeah, a baby. Aqua Baby, they called them, too. Wasn't that some
shit? Yep.
This was an Adventure Comics 452.
Okay.
And this was very political, too. This was Black Manta, who basically was like, because of how racist the world is, me and a group of other African Americans are going to take over Atlantis.
And Daryl, not to interrupt, but I just read this for the very first time, only because, and it was just in the past like couple weeks, only because it was the inserted issue in the Legion of Collectors box.
Yes.
So I've never read this before. It was the first time ever.
Crazy.
But sorry, go ahead.
But throw something like that in this. This is by Dave Michelini and Jim Aparo did the pencils, the lettering, the inking, and the cover. And the coloring is by Tatjana Wood. And it, like, to have that in a book, like, it's political, it's great. Like, to see that he's coming into the city, and they're, like these well-trained soldiers are, they pretty much beat him up. And he's trying to figure out what's going on, and he gets knocked out and captured. He is not the all, you know, like he could beat everybody type of hero. They do not portray him in that way. He gets beat often. So he gets beat up and hunt, and he's trapped with Aqualad and another guy, and they have and Black Manta has Aqua Baby in an air bubble. And this is back when you only can breathe air for an hour, and you die after that. Like, that's it. There's no, that's the rules. You get an hour to be out of water, even if you're Aquaman. And when you're out of water longer than that, you're done. So he had to fight, and they made him fight Aqualad. And at first, of course, he wasn't going to do it. But then when they said, you know, this is your, I have your son, and he's in this air bubble, and if you don't, you know, he'll die. He beat the shit out of Aqualad to the point where they, even in the dialogue, they said that a friendship is ended, pretty much. You know, a relationship is changed, and this is another one where this is, I don't think there's been like a storyline where the sidekick has pretty much quit the mentor, because the mentor was gonna kill him.
Yeah. I remember he's like, listen, I understand it was your child.
Yeah.
And you didn't have a choice, but you still did really actually try to kill me.
It wasn't that thing where, you know, Batman will go, I'll think of something, like, we'll fake a fight and I'll think of something. You know, you gotta get that. No. He basically he made the choice very quickly. I have to kill you, Aqualad, to save my kid. He was like, I'm sorry, that's my kid. Nope. That was, and that's in the, even in the thinking. That's, there's no behind the scenes, like, this is not real. He would have killed him if he didn't find another way. He did. He was able to command the Aquapus to get out of a cage and break the remote that was holding his son. But Aquaman had made a decision in the book to kill Aqualad. Period. Yeah. Like, that was the decision that he made, and he was sorry for it. He probably would regret it, but they wrote Aquaman like a lot of the older stories. Aquaman was written very serious. Like, he wasn't written... There were a lot of stories where he wasn't written as a hero. So his life was really, like, pretty tragic and pretty dire, like, to have to make that decision. If this was real life, I mean, if we had to save our child, I mean...
Yeah.
That could be a real thing. I mean, that it's a horrific thing to do, but... A dilemma, but if you... It's real life situations, you know?
Yeah, you're not going to let your infant son die.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah,
you're going to do it. And he beats... Black Manta, you know, he beats him, gets his kid out of the bubble, and then he goes to, like, go after Black Manta, because Black Manta is going to run, and you hear a scream, and then on panel you see the woman holding the dead Aqua Baby, and he looks, and he's like, he didn't make it, he was in the air bubble too long. And he suffocated to death, and they show it. His body, his lifeless body, is being held. Aquaman doesn't even touch his son. Mm-mm. He says, "I'm going after Black Manta, and I'm going to kill him. No one's going to stop me. I'm going after him. That's it." He doesn't kiss him. He doesn't have a moment where he's like, you know, "I'm sorry, I failed you," and kisses him and all that. Doesn't go back to see Mira with the baby to tell her that she just lost her child, her only son. He just leaves and goes off in search of Black Manta, which goes on for like two or three issues, where he just leaves his wife for days. Like, all she gets is a body sent to her. He doesn't call her, he doesn't check on her, nothing. He just leaves her. And Aqualad is like, I can't fuck with you no more. He's like, come on, Aqualad, let's go. And he's like, I can't. You know, like, I know what you had to do, but I can't. It's better that I not go with you. I cannot mess with you anymore. We can't. Like, these relationships were broken for years.
After I got to read this whole story. And that that trade is not in print, but the individual issues are in Comixology.
They are. So that's why I read it again through that. And they, like, when I say they don't, Mera and Aquaman don't get back together until Peter David's run when she comes back. Because she leaves. She goes off on her, she has one moment where she says to Aquaman, I hate you. And it's not because our son was murdered. She didn't blame him for the son being murdered. She blamed him for running off and leaving her.
Sticking her with the aftermath.
And leaving her with that and not even thinking to himself to console his own wife. I mean, that's a different Aquaman than the one we have now. Their relationship with Mera. And so so he loses her, and there are consequences to his actions. They do not get back together for years. I mean, double digits, I think, before they get back together. because she goes off to her dimension. She goes back to her dimension. Because she's from Atlantis from another dimension, and she goes off back to that and doesn't come back. Like I said, doesn't come back until like the 80s. With Peter David brings her back, and she doesn't come back out of real love, but she, you know, she just comes back. Well, she does miss him, but they don't get back together right away. It's a progression.
Yeah,
it goes a long progression. But that always was like, I remember reading that issue. Like, I had picked up that issue first. It might have been my first Aquaman issue when I was a kid.
You really started. You started on a serious note.
And to read that and go, wow, what? Like, that's what they do in comics? Like, it's so dark. I remember the cover. It had a different cover because it had the baby being held in a funeral casket or something. Like, the baby in a casket. And she's yelling at him in the cover. It's her yelling that this is your fault that our son is dead. That our son is dead. And he's just looking down at her, you know, in sadness. But, what an issue, right? And I never left it. Like, to go from the cartoons to that comic, it's like, fuck that comic. Fuck that cartoon. This is real shit here.
Aquaman's in the Super Friends.
They murdered his son. This is like, yo.
Oh, my Lord.
But, yeah, it was so good. I
that's good stuff.
I definitely enjoyed reading these stories. So,
that's awesome.
Wow.
I got to read that one of these days.
You should. You should read that. I want to talk about it with Mike, too, because that's so much fun to, when he rereads something.
Yeah.
Because I know he's read it, but I don't know how long it's been since he's read this story.
Well, you guys both have a love of Aquaman back from years past. So.
Yeah. So, like, between that and his Flash love. I love Flash, too, but his Flash love for Barry. I think he loves Barry a little bit more than me. I love Wally a little bit more.
Yeah, Wally's my Flash.
I've always read more Wally. I think I've read more Wally stories, adding up all of the ones from Teen Titans on.
Yeah.
And then Mark Waid and all that. I think I've read more Wally stories than I've ever read of Barry.
We're all kind of the age that would be true. Yeah. You know? That was definitely my thing too is Wally. You know, I mean, I definitely had read some older stuff for Barry, but he's Wally's my Flash.
Just like Kyle was, I've read more I've probably read like 30-40% of Hal Jordan's old stuff, but I've read the entire run of Kyle. Like, I've read it from start to finish with Kyle, so I know more of Kyle than I do of Hal. Like, when they throw things in there, sometimes I'll know, vaguely remember it, but I have to look it up or something.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. So, Chris, you got another one?
Real quick, I'll mention real quick the other thing that I read. I just grabbed one of my Wonder Woman Showcase volumes. This is volume 2. I just grabbed it and read a random issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just talk about it real quick. It's Wonder Woman volume 1, issue 127. And, as the team for a long time at that point was Robert Kaniger, with Ross Andrew and Mike Esposito on art. And you know, Robert Kaniger is more known for his war stuff, and like I don't know if he was. Yeah, I mean, he was good on that stuff. I don't know if he was the best choice for Wonder Woman at the time.
You said 127?
Yeah. But it's got a it's got two stories in it. One, Invaders of the Topsy-Turvy Planet, is kind of amusing. There's just these, talking about just coming up with, you know, interesting villains or interesting concepts, not so much about being about characterization. There's these funny little alien dudes that are from the Topsy-Turvy Planet, and it takes a whole page to show you, like, they walk on water, they swim on land. When they meet each other, they say goodbye. It's everything's backwards, you know. It doesn't matter if it would actually work or make sense, right, like, physically, you know. Like, their favorite resting, they show them sleeping, and they sleep using, like, it looks like what, like, dog bowls, basically, but they use them to, like, rest their heads so that they can sleep standing on their heads. Just silly shit like that, but... but Wonder Woman, I forget why, she's, as Wonder Woman, she's, I think Etta Candy brings her into it, where they, yeah, it's like her, Etta's holiday college is crazy caper day. So, like, Wonder Woman's along for these, sorority girls basically doing all these, like, dumb, like, 50s college pranks. Like, they try to get all get stuffed into a phone book. I mean, a phone booth.
a phone book.
And but then the
like the cover.
Yeah. Right, like the cover, yeah. And that accidentally gets the phone booth actually gets taken by the topsy-turvy aliens, so Wonder Woman's got to rescue them and stuff, and then they do this thing where they're all like piled up on beds and they're pushing the bed across the field and just this weird college stuff, and basically Wonder Woman has to keep rescuing them, and eventually, like, you know, she manages to get rid of the aliens. But the one thing that I wanted to point out with the story is just showing the differences in time. Like, throughout the issue there's just all these jokes about Etta Candy's weight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like the girls are like, her other sorority sisters, like, keep making comments about, you know, trying to find one. There's, oh yeah, when they're pushing the beds, one of the girls is like, what's holding back this bed? Woo. And other girls like, you are Etta Candy. We'll never win this race unless you stop stuffing yourself all the time. Yeah, it's just like, ouch. But that happens like it's not just one time. Like, it's just throughout the issue, like three or four times. They just keep making.
Yeah, her weight gets she gets picked off jokes. For her weight jokes a lot in the early stuff. But who are the people that are writing these books? Like, the dudes.
Right.
So, you know, they think that's what women would say.
It actually even reminds, not that it reminds me, but it makes me think of the original Harbinger run with Zephyr.
Yeah.
Oh.
They call her, you know, the Zeppelin, Blimp, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
As part of a normal conversation, mm-hmm. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh my God, these are your teammates.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the 80s.
The 90s,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It shows you things have changed in some ways, because now look at, you know, she's more of like a
inspirational character.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, inspirational. Yeah. But things have changed in some ways, thankfully. Yeah. But
in some ways, and in others, it's like, I don't want to read that Faith being a big girl. You still get some of that, though, no matter what. You still get some of that old type of thinking.
Oh, it's still there.
Yeah.
It's just not
thankfully, it's not.
It's not celebrated.
Acceptable.
It's not celebrated when they make those comments. So it's not
exactly. You're still going to have those people do it. It's just like
Yeah, we need at least another we need at least another 6 months of this new administration before it's acceptable.
Again. Oh yeah, it'll be acceptable. I think it's going to take how long? It's all right to call women fat and
probably be okay by tomorrow. I would.
Right. Oh, I'm sure in their you know, some of the crowds for the celebrations, they will. It's all right.
Oh, absolutely.
Biggest inauguration crowd, period.
Oh man, it was huge. I was there. I stood right in front. I was clapping as hard as I could.
Best one ever.
So many black people at that event. It was wonderful.
Exactly.
It was just a coalition of the willing. It was great.
But
Anyhow, go ahead.
The other story in here is pretty amusing, a little bit more so. It's called Wonder Woman's Surprise Honeymoon. And it's her and Steve going on a honeymoon. And you know when you're reading it that it's going to be an imaginary story.
Of course.
You know,
right.
You could tell right away that it's not going to be real, but it's funny because it's again, you know, you could tell it's written by a guy in the 50s because it's just like all about how Steve is exasperated by his new wife, how like no matter what they do, like she has to keep, they're supposed to be on their honeymoon, but she just keeps stopping. And you know, at first it's just okay, we gotta sign autographs, but then you know, then she gives away her wedding dress because she meets like a poor girl that doesn't is trying to get married, but she can't afford a wedding dress. Mm-hmm. So it does, like, it is true to Wonder Woman's character, you know, like she'd just do anything for anybody, but Steve the whole time is just like he just wants to get on with their honeymoon, and so she gives this girl her wedding dress. Well, then it like he's like, all right, well, you know, let's get going. Well, next panel, they're like standing there at the other woman's wedding because she invited them, and Steve's like, I'd like to know when we're ever going to be alone.
So basically, he's saying, I'm trying to get laid, and you keep finding other shit to do. Well, that ain't too far from what I'd be thinking. If you was married to Wonder Woman, I would want to get alone time as quick as possible.
Let's consummate.
Don't let her remember that she married me. I gotta get in there before she changes her mind.
The most outdated scene, though, like the most silly scene, is they finally get to like the cabin that they're staying in, and Steve just plops himself down on the chair and on the porch, and it's like, all right, now I'm gonna. Soon, Wonder Woman will serve me my first Amazon meal.
Oh,
I'll bet it tastes like nothing on earth. So even though she's Wonder Woman, like, you know, he just sits on his ass while she cooks him a dinner, and then it's this toast's burnt, this meat's raw, this Jell-O's hot, this coffee's cold.
I hope she was barefoot because I don't like it when they wear shoes.
She's wearing heels.
Oh no, I want them to be barefoot in the kitchen with an apron on.
I don't know what's worse.
Yeah, that's too. That's too. Too modern for me. I don't like that.
Yeah. So even though she's Wonder Woman, she starts to burst into tears when, you know, you never asked me whether I could cook.
You didn't marry me for my cooking. Did you say that?
But that's the funniest part of it. But then, you know, it ends with she saves some missiles from landing when they're supposed to be on the beach, and then finally, Steve comes to from this dream, but he's still coming out of the dream when he's waking up, and he says, "I'd be the happiest man in the world if only I weren't married to you." Well, he actually says this out loud to the real Wonder Woman.
Oh.
And the story ends with her still pissed off at him, like she won't talk to him. He's like, "You can't blame me for what I dream about. It's not fair, is it? Speak to me. Will you speak to me?" She's pissed. So it was kind of a funny
ending.
Although
I have gotten in trouble for dreams.
Shows you the time.
I've had that happen.
Yeah.
Where I woke up.
You can't control it.
Where I woke up to you would do that, wouldn't you? And I go, what? And then you get the whole, this is what I dreamed. It's your fault. You did it. That is funny. So, like some of those old Wonder Woman. I have that old trade. They just did a trade of old Wonder, like the best of Wonder Woman stories or something like that. And I forgot what the trade was. And I'm trying to read some of them. It's some of those are some rough stories to get through, man. It's just,
oh yeah,
they are.
I was just gonna say, I don't think, like, from what I've read, Robert Kanigher didn't really give a shit about Wonder Woman or wanting to do the job, and I've heard that he wasn't the nicest guy to get along with either.
Wasn't a happy gig for people a lot of times. They got Wonder
Woman. No.
They were like, it was a male dominated, it still is to a point, but you know, like to be male dominated and you want other stuff. You want war books. You want, that was when war books were popular and you know, the Superman and all that kind of stuff. But Wonder Woman was not your, dream gig. You know,
he obviously didn't care about like whatever strange quasi feminist quasi bondage type stuff that William Marston was like coming up with and stuff. So it was like they kind of just they had the property, they owned Wonder Woman, but they just kind of shuffled it off to him, and he wrote the book for a long time. But it wasn't like you're not gonna find the most revolutionary stories in that time period, but you can find some amusing ones. Like,
no, there's mostly some funny ones. There's some funny ones in it, but then there's others where she's like crying over nothing. Like, it'll be like, that's what women cry about. Like, it's
just, right. She was, she'd do stuff that was just like no different than the women in the romance costume or comics and stuff. This is also when they had Wonder Tot too. Woman.
Yeah. And this is a woman that could break your neck with just her hand, her bare hands.
Yeah.
And she, when Steve says something like, this steak tastes nasty, she starts breaking down in tears. Like,
right. Get it.
Right.
There are scenes like that. It's just so, it's funny to read them now. Like, you know, probably as a kid, I probably wouldn't have thought twice about it, because what do we know about women as a kid?
But, yeah.
I mean, what do we know now about women? I mean, I don't look at them either. You just try to not to get yelled at.
That's it.
That's the
deal. Do your best.
Just do your best not to get yelled at. And and you keep it moving. But yeah, I mean, to read that, some of that stuff now, it is just like, wow. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Like, she's always, like, getting tied up to a missile, or riding a missile, or... It's always some weird, like, it's just some kind of weird thing of that they do with her where you go, wow, this is really of its time.
Yep. I mean, that's why I was with some of these, because DC goes back farther than Marvel does as far as, like, their popular characters. Like, with some, they don't have it in this one, but some of these showcase volumes, if you look at the front, they'll have some kind of disclaimer, like, you know, these are presented as they originally appeared, but... do not reflect, like, because that, you know, there'll be something that's like worse than this kind of stuff, like something that's like racist or whatever.
Oh, and yeah, just,
they gotta put their disclaimer there, like, you know, we're just, you know, we don't. This is not what we do now. It's just this is how things, you know.
Don't protest back us. You know what? I agree with that. I don't like them to change stuff if that's how it was. I'd rather read it as it's presented. Right. I don't want it to be like, don't try to modernize it and act like it never happened. Like, just,
well, that reminds me of when they released the Looney Tunes on DVD. They just, you know, kept releasing all the old cartoons.
Right.
Exact same thing. As a matter of fact, I think it was they had Whoopi Goldberg actually, instead of it being written out, she actually said it out loud.
Yeah.
That, you know, these are of the time,
yeah,
and you know, they're not, you know, many of them are not necessarily stuff that would be considered acceptable, but here they are in the original form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever that may.
Well, you're not doing anybody any favors.
No,
changing the past. You know, history. That's not gonna.
Yeah, it's history. Now, I only worry when you say you want to go back to history.
Right.
That's when I go, what? What you mean? Right. Yeah. What you mean no, by that's that? What
totally
you,
different.
Yeah, what you saying? What are you saying?
Yep.
But don't take it away. Man.
Yeah.
All right, well, I need to get going, I think.
Yeah, I think we've
wrap it up.
I think we've
held it. We did good. We did very well.
For the books.
We did some retro talking. I think we've done it. We did, what, two hours and 49 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Mike will be
there
happy.
There you go.
Yeah, we did it good. We did it well.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, so guys. What's the information we got to give out? Ooh, I forget about that.
Chris, Chris, you're the only one who remembers all that stuff.
Yeah, you're a regular now. You got to give that information.
I know.
I always forget.
I gotta learn this stuff.
You got to start learning, yeah. But all right, yeah. This has been Retrocast episode 81. You can find it at geekbrunchpodcast.com. Got to get all my consonants in the right order. Mm-hmm. And let's see, on Twitter, I am at MythMakingETC. Daryl is the voice 123. And Rob is just Rob Krieger, K-R-Y, Krieger. See, Mike messed me up last time.
He did. He totally did.
K-R-Y-G-I-E-R.
That's impressive.
You spell it correct. Well, it's right in front of my face. So
Skype. Yeah, you supposed to pretend that you knew it.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm too honest.
Yeah, too honest, man. What's wrong with you? This is a new world here. Lie. What are you telling the truth for?
If you say it, it makes it true.
Yes, if you say, I knew it all along.
Uh-huh.
That means it's true.
Oh. And Mike, our regular host, is at Mike Myers Brunch. And you can email me, mythmakingetc@gmail.com. Daryl, do you have an email that you give out or use?
I mean, it's a Taylor Network one, so I wouldn't give it. Oh, I do have a comic. I do have a comic book noise email though.
Yeah, write that. Yeah, Daryl.
Yeah, Daryl at comicbooknoise.com. I always forget about it. I never check it.
You don't really need. Nobody will email you anyway.
Yeah.
Nobody emails.
But talk to the boss. You got to talk to the boss.
Facebook, right? Twitter. People use that stuff anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
It's the Twitters now. It's what the kids is using. It's the Twitters.
That's right.
Exactly.
All right.
And I think that's about it, though.
All right.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
You guys have a good Sunday, I should say. Weekend almost over.
I know.
Yeah.
Then back to work tomorrow.
Yep.
I'm sad all
now day. We're getting into the dark period, like where there's no holidays for
none.
Like several months.
Yep, that's it.
It's like gonna be rough.
Martin Luther King Jr. And then it's like May is the next time.
Yeah, pretty rough.
5-day work weeks.
Who needs that?
Nobody.
So.
Nope.
All right, you guys.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Yep,
thanks. Later.
Have a good one.
Goodbye.
Bye.